suffer from arthritis or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Charmtech, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Charmtech, the product with bite. Visit us at www.charmtech.org.
Expressed on this program by its guests do not necessarily reflect the views or beliefs of the host or radio network. This program's sole intent is to help educate, foster critical debate, and help raise and discuss political and social issues which already exist in the public domain. Thank you for enjoying the program.
Liked it better that way.
Welcome this week, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and at 21stCenturyWire.com and at iTunes.com. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful Sunday, November the 29th, 2015, episode 111 for all you numerologists out there. That's 1 plus 1 equals... Or 1 plus 1 equals 111. So episode 111. Thank you for joining us. What an amazing week it's been. Probably the biggest news story. One of the biggest news stories that you could have. I hope they don't get any bigger than this, but it was pretty big. If they get bigger than what happened this week, then we're all in deep you know what. So let's hope that they don't get much bigger, but they seem to be getting bigger. This is something we're concerned about. So I woke up and I didn't know I wasn't expecting anything really outrageous that day, this week, and went about my daily thing trying to put a Parish Attacks mashup show together for the midweek broadcast, the midweek report. A midweek wire, and all of a sudden, and so I did that all day, and I was working on that, and all of a sudden, I hear the news that a Russian fighter was shot down, by a Turkish Air Force, F-16, I believe. So a Russian Sukhoi Su-25, I think it was, 24-25 fighter bomber shot down by the Turks. Allegedly, Russia was in violation of the Turkish airspace. That was the story as it went out anyway. And so I sort of caught up with that story and stayed up for about 30 straight hours. Did some coverage with RT International at about 2 a.m. my time, 3 a.m. or something like that. And stayed on the story, looking for breaking bits and pieces and putting it together. and then putting our analysis together. And I think, you know, if you look at the coverage, our coverage of both Paris and the Turkey-Russia air controversy, I think our coverage has been pretty good, pretty darn good for the skeleton crack crew that we have that are all over the place. We do pull it together for the big stories, and we did on this one. Analysis is pretty accurate. So again, this is the timing of it. Well, you can't deny the timing of it. So a crisis in NATO. Yes, absolutely a crisis in NATO. Was this a planned provocation by Turkey? Well, that's up to the evidence to sort of bear out, but you can't know for sure if the order came from all the way up the chain. But my personal opinion is that it did. I don't believe Turkey acted on its own, because if you look at what's ensued, it's a horrible event for Russia, because two of their pilots ejected after this shootdown occurred, and the moderate terrorists on the ground there in the northwestern northern bit of Latakia, right along the border of Turkey, the moderate terrorists, the Turkmen fighters, as they're called, started shooting the pilots as they came down in the parachutes, and obviously killed one of them in midair, which in itself is, well, a violation of the Geneva Conventions. But hey, who cares about the Geneva Conventions if you're a moderate terrorist running around in Syria? They don't really care. So anyway, shot the Russian pilot. The other one somehow managed to evade capture, perhaps. I'm not sure, but there was a rescue attempt by the Russian Marine Forces and Syrian Arab Army on the ground, and they lost a helicopter and lost one of their officers too. So two dead, basically. And I believe two Syrian soldiers died, I believe, trying to rescue this one Russian pilot. Okay. So it's not a game. It's war. This isn't a game. And I think there's a lot of people in the United States, in Europe, a lot of bureaucrats, a lot of apologists for what we now know is total collusion, between Turkey and ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Syria and on and on and on, and Saudi Arabia, collusion as well, that's been known but not spoken of. And I think people are starting to talk about it now. But what has happened between Turkey and Russia has been, Russia's put the freeze on any diplomatic relations, told all the tourists, by the way, Turkey's the number one tourist destination for Russians. They've already been hit because of the ruble crash. The ruble crisis has already hit Turkish tourism. Now it's non-existent in terms of what's coming from Russia. The value of that tourism is between $1 and $1.5 billion per year. That's over $100 million a month in money going into that country. I'm sure the people of Turkey need that. And let me stress, I know I've known Turks for 25 years, and they're great people. Absolutely a wonderful, fantastic culture, great people. But I'm going to have to say the leadership of that country right now, I have big questions about, because it looks to me like they're running a kind of a mafia state. And the theme of the show is the Sultan Complex. And President Erdogan of Turkey appears to have what looks like a Sultan complex. So the behavior on this particular issue, you don't shoot down another country's fighter jet just because you think they violated your airspace. As it turns out, it looks more and more like Russia did not violate Turkey's airspace. It's absolutely confirmed the missile which hit the Russian plane made contact, hit it in Syrian airspace, and the plane went down in Syrian territory, as did the pilots. Okay, that's confirmed. So technically, that is Turkey is in violation of numerous international laws and was the aggressor, actually. Russia did not fire upon any Turkish airspace, did not threaten the country. And this is being spun by the cowards in Washington who came straight out. And front of the list is President Barack Obama, who said Turkey has a right to defend its airspace. And if their airspace is threatened, this is also what the Turkish president said. This is a ridiculous statement. Russia had been flying regular sorties for the last 3 or 4 weeks, every day, over the same exact part of the region. Okay, every day. And that information was shared with all parties, including Turkey. Okay, Turkey should have no reason to feel threatened, knowing all that they know and that's information shared. This was part of the deconfliction agreement, which was established. And the U.S. is sharing that information, or should be anyway, with Turkey. Now, if the U.S. wasn't sharing that information with Turkey, then we know basically that the U.S. is part of this stitch up here. Okay. So either way, all roads lead to Washington, in my opinion. So this creates a now trade embargo between Turkey and Russia. That's a big deal. That's basically a declaration of war, although not a passive declaration of war, but nonetheless, that's the first step towards declaring war. This isn't good. None of this is good. Okay, but it's an aggressive move by Turkey, and it's being spun by the cowards in the Western media as Russia was threatening Turkey. I mean, give me a break. So what do we learn about old Turkey? What's Turkey been up to? Well, let's hear some of the U.S. media coverage on this particular story. Let me see. We've got a wolf clip here. Audio clip 15. Go ahead and roll this. Wolf Blitzer. This was some of what CNN was grappling with after the fact. And we'll get into it.
Other breaking news, the Turkish military releasing audio of what it says were 10 warnings to a Russian fighter jet that entered Turkish airspace. That jet eventually was taken down by Turkish warplanes, F-16s, in a move Russia says looks like it was a planned provocation. We're back with the Democratic Congressman Adam Smith of Washington State, the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee. I want to show you and our viewers some an animation of what happened along that Turkish-Syrian border as that Russian plane maneuvered. It actually went over a tiny little strip of southern Turkey, this according to U.S. and Turkish officials, for maybe 17 seconds as it was maneuvering there. Didn't take very long, 2 miles, if that, and then Turkey shot down that Russian Su-24. Was that justified to do that? Did Turkey do the right thing?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to get more facts to know if this was justified. But this is part of a pattern from Russia. If this had been the first time that they had gone into Turkish airspace, I doubt this would have happened. But this has been going on for quite some time, and not just in Turkey. Russia has been flaunting international law. They've been sending submarines into territorial waters. There have been many instances where they've been buzzing U.S. aircraft, where they've sent their aircraft into airspace that is where they're not supposed to be. And Putin has been trying, basically, to provoke and weaken NATO by going anywhere he wants to go. And so I think it's part of that pattern that led up to this. If this had been the first time that a Russian airplane had gone into Turkish airspace, I don't think you would have seen Turkey react this way. But it's happened frequently, and Turkey has warned Russia about this. So I think the response was basically, you know, because of all of the incursions into Turkish airspace that Russia has done. And Russia needs to stop doing that, not just in Turkey, but in a lot lot of other places where they have been sending ships and or airplanes into airspace that where they shouldn't be.
As you know, the those ethnic Turks in Syria, Turkmen as they're called, allied with Turkey, they actually started firing machine guns as the two pilots ejected from that downed warplane, and one of the pilots was killed. This is considered to be, at least by some, a violation of international law, war crime, if you will. And by all accounts, Russia probably is going to go after those Turkmen, those ethnic Turks inside Syria. The Turkish government says they want to protect their fellow Turks in Syria. This could escalate this crisis, couldn't it?
Allahu Akbar.
Yes, no, it's a dangerous situation. Keep in mind, independent of the violation of Turkish airspace, Turkey is backing rebels who want to remove Assad. Russia is trying to protect Assad. So Russia has been bombing these Turkish-backed rebels for some time. So yes, there's the clear potential for a conflict here, and I think it is really important that we try to work together to get on the same page. I mean, Russia says they're concerned about ISIL, though to this point, mostly they've been bombing rebels that are not associated with ISIL. Mostly, Russia just wants to protect their interests in Syria. And what we have to convince them is that Assad is not the solution to that. We need an alternative to President Assad, and we need to work with as many different groups as possible to get that alternative in place. And that's not going to be easy. But yeah, Russia and Turkey are on opposite sides of a conflict directly to the south of Turkey, and there is definitely a huge risk of escalation given that reality.
You say the U.S. should consider partnering with Russia in Syria if Putin demonstrates his commitment first and foremost to fighting ISIS. Is that realistic given his support for Bashar al-Assad's regime?
Okay, so that was Wolf Blitzer, and I don't have the name of the person. It's probably either a military person or someone from Washington. I don't have the name at hand, unfortunately. One of their experts, nonetheless. So, and I got nothing nice to say about that person because you could see the snottiness in his voice at the beginning of that segment. You can go ahead and rewind this if you listen to the recording, but he said, so it was all about Russia, 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 Putin, Putin, Putin. Oh, this is a pattern of behavior by Russia. Okay. Let's just talk. This is me to the so-called experts. Okay. And I don't care what your title is. I don't care how many years you're in the Pentagon or whatever. If you're on CNN sitting there in front of Blitzer, then your job is you're a propagandist. Okay. You're there to pitch whatever the sort of party line is, okay? You're a press hooker. You're a press hooker if you're sitting there on CNN, because CNN, it has no credibility anymore, okay? And I'll talk about that in a minute, a scandal that's come up with CNN that pretty much proves everything that we've been saying about the Central Intelligence Cable Network. So let's just talk about what this expert said. So he said that Putin's trying to weaken NATO. Last time I checked, NATO is completely surrounding Russia, which is a huge break from the remit of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Let's talk about airspace for a minute, okay? During the whole of the Cold War, this is the military, whatever the Pentagon lackey or expert. Listen to me. During the whole of the Cold War, that didn't happen. Okay? That didn't happen. If that happened this week, it's because someone gave the order for that to happen. These things do not happen by accident. I'm sorry. But you listen to the U.S. media, you listen to the coverage, and they're sitting there like goofballs, with their thumb in their mouth, saying, oh, I wonder what if it was an accident or if it was intentional. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. So that was a Sukhoi 24, Sukhoi 25 fighter bomber. It's not a super, it's a fast aircraft, but it's not as fast as an F-16. So normally the protocol would be if they did indeed try to contact them by radio, and I heard the recording released by Turkish authorities the day after. It was a joke. Okay, I couldn't even understand what the guy was saying. If I was a Russian, even if I was fluent in English, I wouldn't have been able to understand a damn word the guy said. The Turkish air traffic controller, the pilot. So, That's the first thing. Second thing is they claim they gave them 10 warnings. How can you give them 10 warnings if you're only, and then Turkey says they're only in our airspace 17 seconds. How do you give 10 warnings in 17 seconds? Unless you're like the guy at the auction. Give me the dime, give me more, give me the dime, more. Sold, number four. That guy could probably give 10 warnings in 17 seconds. Yeah, or MC Young, the young MC, could probably do it. Okay, anybody else? Impossible. And in bad Turkish English. No way. Okay, the whole thing is a joke. Turkey, the explanation, it was so weak, it was so pathetic. To put that out internationally did not do Turkey any favors in terms of its reputation because it was so shoddy. Okay, and who could possibly buy that story? Well, you'd like to think no one did, but of course Barack Obama seems to have bought it. So it doesn't say a lot of good things about President Obama and his capacity to deal with these types of sensitive issues. Okay. He immediately took Turkey's side. So normally the F-16, if you don't make radio contact, rules of engagement, or at least in civilized world, is the faster aircraft will then move alongside of the slower aircraft, and you could even get a visual cockpit to cockpit visual contact. And then there are a series of hand signals, international hand signals, where one pilot could say to the other, you know, change your heading south, you're in our airspace, basically. If the radio is not working for whatever reason. That's normal, okay? And the Soviet Union, the United States, would be able to tell you they've been doing that, or the British and the Soviet Union, or the Germans, or whoever. The Germans don't have an air force, but could tell you that they've been doing that for decades, okay? That's how you avoid these unfortunate situations, okay? So if the Turkish pilot is that stupid, or they're that dumb that they don't know that, then they shouldn't be flying, full stop. And to say that they're a part of NATO is a joke. I don't think they're that stupid. I think they knew exactly what they're doing. That was a ambush attack designed to increase the tension in the area. So Turkey's basically taking one for the team by half taking ownership of this. Washington's in the background waiting to see how Russia will react. Okay. And then using this as a kind of a crisis to see if there's a way that we can increase the tension so that people become more afraid about the consequences in this region and they will demand a greater international presence and sanctuaries, safe zones, and all these things they're talking about, no-fly zones, which is a complete crackpot concept in this situation. But, you know, our politicians are complete crackpots for the most part. And you can see when these things happen, you can see who's actually got brains and who doesn't have a clue what they're talking about. So Turkey's on about its airspace and everyone's all, yeah, of course, Turkey needs to protect its airspace. It's this right. Turkey violates Greece's airspace on a daily basis. A daily basis for I don't know how many years. To provoke Greece. Okay? Do you know that? Does anybody know that? Does anybody know that? And I can tell you as well, personally, that when I was in Lebanon, Israel violates Lebanese airspace and does it in a very aggressive way, even over cities like Beirut. Okay? And they call it whatever, buzzing the city or whatever. I don't know. But, it's not a nice thing when that happens. So, and Israel violates Syria's airspace as and when it wants, and it will even bomb them occasionally as and when they want. Turkey violates Syria's airspace. The United States violates Syria's airspace on a daily basis. Oh, and by the way, Turkey stopped violating Greek airspace after the Russian Su-24 got shot down. They shot it down. Then they stopped incursions into Greek airspace with their F-16 Air Force that day. Now, that should tell you something. That should tell you something. That was part of the game plan, okay? So it also shows their guilt. So what about Syria's airspace? Do they have any rights? Well, according to the U.S. and its grand coalition, no, they don't have any rights. Because Bashar al-Assad must go, blah, 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 that old tired old mantra. Just keep playing that old broken record. So, oh my goodness. So this pilot gets shot down and pilot escapes, or one pilot escapes, the other gets killed in midair, and the moderate terrorists drag his body all over the place and put it up on Twitter. Okay. It's pretty gruesome. We reposted that tweet. It wasn't too bad. You couldn't see a whole lot. You kind of can work out what you were looking at there, but we put it up because it wasn't too graphic, because if it was too graphic, I'd probably just link to it. But I wanted, it was important as part of the story that people understand, because in that video, you could hear that these were not moderate rebels, that they were shouting, Mujahideen, Mujahideen. You can go to the story on 21st Century Wire. You can watch that video. I think that was when the story broke. We had that up there. I'll try to get that for you. But this is not, these are not moderate rebels. I'm sorry. No, these are hardcore jihadists. Make no mistake about that. Okay. And here we have our media trying to tell us, oh, they're the moderate rebels. Okay. One could make the argument that Turkey shot down that Russian plane because they were basically, Turkey was trying to protect its terrorists on the ground. Pretty shocking. But that's not out of the realms of possibility. Okay. So, wow. It gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. So I think what we'll do now is we'll take a short commercial break. We'll queue up some more items for you. We'll get into this. And at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by our first guest. He's an international journalist, independent journalist, I might add. His name is Finian Cunningham. He's going to join us to talk about this situation. This is a fluid situation happening in the Middle East, and also about what's happening in Ukraine. So let's take a short commercial break. I'm your host, Patrick Hankson. We'll be right back after these messages.
Searched to find the perfect life. Dig away this ball and chain.
Do you suffer from arthritis or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharptec, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharptec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharptec.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Wire, I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network at ACR and also at 21stCenturyWire.com and at iTunes. We're just before the break, I was talking to you about the clip. This was shot by the moderate terrorists on the ground after they shot up a Russian pilot who was parachuting to safety. And I saw this right when it came out. It was sort of, someone dropped it on my Facebook page. And, I'm gonna go ahead and play this clip. Listen closely to the, to them celebrating about the prize that they've got. It's, this is just the audio, obviously. The video's a little bit gory, but, you can tell what's going on in the audio. Go ahead and roll that.
The Yard Lucy, Allah Akbar!
Allah Akbar!
Okay, so those are the moderate rebels. Those are the John McCain's little army running around. And so they're trying to say, well, these are the moderate rebels. Okay. Well, what do we find out from this? We find out that not only are they not the moderate rebels, they're saying, oh, these are the Turkmen fighters. The Turkmen fighters. Turns out that they're not just Turkmen, they're Turkish, some of them are Turkish nationals. One of them, who was celebrating in one of the videos, it turns out that, his father is a high-ranking politician. A member of the MHP, former mayor of Kayban. And the fighter himself is a member of the, one of the Turkish nationalist, party, one of the vanguard organizations called the Grey Wolves. This is directly, the president himself. This is part of his political vanguard. So this changes things a little bit, doesn't it? So Turkey is covering for these guys. How can you cover for people like that? Well, that's what they're trying to do. I say guilty as charged. Completely. So this is a Islamist rebel group. So these are basically Al-Qaeda affiliates. Whatever you want to call them. There's no difference between ISIS. The only difference is the flag. Okay? And maybe some minor differences. But essentially, they're all playing for the same cause, which is a kind of establish some sort of a caliphate in Syria and Iraq and who knows where else. So these are the people the U.S. is backing. They've got U.S. weapons, U.S. TOW missiles. They blew up the Russian rescue helicopter, killed the Russian officers with a U.S.-supplied TOW missile from the United States of America. Boom. No ifs, ands, or buts. We are arming terrorists. Okay, that is illegal on every count internationally and domestically and whatever. We are arming terrorists. this is what it is. And even the U.S. admits, the U.S. even admits, backtracks a little bit and says, actually, you know what? It took a couple of days. We knew straight away. I told you straight away, or more or less said as much. But Washington finally, after enough days, admits that the Russian Su-24 combat plane was actually downed in Syrian airspace, not Turkish airspace. You see, that doesn't make any headlines, though. Isn't it amazing? That would be big news. No, not in the U.S. media. It's too embarrassing. It makes little news. Little news. Little news. So, my goodness. So what happens? The day after this, everyone was waiting. Obama had a speech planned. Rose Garden, or the East Room, with François Hollande. They've all got the French pronunciation down pat. François, I'll call him Hollande, but they say François Hollande. Hollande. Everyone at CNN got their crash French course. So Obama comes out striding out. You expect him to address this, what can only be described as a kind of a provocation. A NATO member shooting down a Russian fighter. And then what happened after was horrific. You'd expect him to address this right off the bat, but no. CNN comes out with the leader. Obama says, we are all French now. So just more hashtags. You expect substance, you get hashtags. This is what American politics is now. So twisted and full of lies. Hashtag city. Okay, Obama, we are French now. Now you expect him to get into it, and there's Hollande there. I mean, Hollande, I don't know what to say about that guy, but I can talk about my president. He started with his act, his jokes, it was cringeworthy. Such a serious moment in history. And we look to our president, and he carries on like it's a Rotary Club speech. It was humiliating. And then it doesn't mention anything about Russia or nothing like this. Here's Obama's opening gamut. All the press are there. The worthless press corps is there. Everyone's impressed. And Obama begins by saying, they're part of our, he's talking about France. Okay. So he's kissing up to all things French. They're part of our memories, woven into the fabric of our lives and our culture. I'm very grateful to the French people for the hospitality they've always shown me. And when they welcomed Michelle and our daughters, on her first visit to the City of Lights, by my bed in the residence in the White House, there's a picture of me and Michelle in Luxembourg Gardens in Paris kissing. Those are the memories we have of Paris, as early on. That was back when I had no gray hair. Ha ha ha. I just gave you Obama's speech there. That was word for word, pretty much. What a joke. So, you know, the world's looking and watching, and this is what our president has to offer up to deal with this. Talking about his Kodak moments. Unbelievable. And then they go on to straight away, what does the president do? He blames Russia, chastises Russia, and says, you know, I do think, that this points to an ongoing problem. With the Russian operations, in a sense that they're operating very close to the Turkish border, and they're going after the moderate opposition that are supported not only by Turkey but a wide range of countries, including us. And if Russia is directing its energy instead towards Daesh and ISIL. Who the hell are Daesh and ISIL? So Daesh, Obama, Daesh. Okay, and it's not ISIL, it's ISIS. Some of those conflicts or potential for mistakes or potential for escalations are less likely to occur. That's what he said. That's what he said. So he not only avoids the issue, he feeds you a lie. And the lie is that, and you hear this lie repeated over and over, Goebbels would be proud right now that Russia is not attacking ISIS, that Russia is attacking U.S.-backed rebels. Well, that might be true, but who are the U.S.-backed rebels? Because if they're al-Nusra Front, those are hardcore Islamic terrorists. So you're admitting those are U.S.-backed rebels, and Washington nods its head and says yes. Am I the only one who sees the problem here? No, I think a lot of people see the problem here now. The whole enterprise is a fraud. The whole thing is a fraud. Everyone's supposed to be horrified by ISIS, and Obama comes here and gives and Hollande, Francois, that Assad is the problem, that Assad is the reason. Hollande even dropped a new figure, that Assad has killed 300,000 of his own people now. He's pumped up that number. Last week it was 240,000 civilians, they claim. Where do they get these numbers? They just make them up. They make up the numbers. There's some stooge who goes by a fake name, Rami Abdelrahman. That's not his real name, his last name. His real name is Osman. So he's a Syrian ex-convict who gets funding from the European Union to run the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights out of his bedroom. And he supplies all these statistics. It's a laugh. It really is a laugh. If it weren't so tragic, it would be funny. And you have the French leader going and quoting some stooge running an NGO out of his flat in Coventry, getting funding from the Foreign Office, maybe. I don't know for sure. I would guess yes. The same people who fund the White Helmets. That's another sort of bogus NGO. And the European Union. And then so he produces the statistics, which they base as their evidence of how many people Bashar al. So they've demonized Assad based on a lot of this sort of fictional made-up stuff. And again, I'm still waiting for a film of the barrel bombings because I haven't seen. They're telling us they happen every 5 minutes, yet no one's produced a video of one. Okay, so that's that. What a disappointment! But you know, you get used to these disappointments with this president. You really do. It just becomes the norm. So on we go, on we go. So let's look at, gosh almighty, I don't know where to start. I really don't know where to start. Well, one of the good things that's come out of this event is that it's exposed Turkey, and people are now starting to talk about what we've been talking about for a long time, about the transfer of so-called ISIS oil, illegal black market oil trade through Turkey, and the guns, and the human trafficking, and the narcotics, and the Capticon, and the cash, and the weapons, and the terrorist fighters camping out in Turkey, coming to fight in Syria, going back to Turkey, back to Syria, getting trained by probably our special forces at some maybe Incirlik Air Base. I don't know if they've got a little training operation set up there. You don't know. It's so bad, you don't know where to start. They've been doing our NATO, our allies, whoever, whatever you want to call it, the coalition of the willing. They've been training terrorists in Jordan and Turkey for the last 4 years and just pumping them into Syria. Massive mayhem, maximum chaos. And then we turn around and say, oh, we're going to fight ISIS, coalition. We're going to do airstrikes. We're going to bomb ISIS. They've been building up ISIS for the last 4 years. The allies, the coalition. Incredible. And then you have, it's worse than that. It really is worse than that. And then you have people coming on saying that, well, Saudi Arabia and Turkey need to be on the same page. I heard that today. That, you know, if this is really going to work, we need Turkey and Saudi Arabia on the same page. We need to be on our page. So, I don't know, here's a good example of that. This is audio clip 26. So this is them talking about, how we need to, you know, Saudi and the Turks need to be, I don't know who this was. We'll talk about it after the clip, but go ahead and roll that. Audio clip 26.
Make, any progress against ISIS if Turkey and Saudi Arabia are not sort of following the U.S. Strategic goal here?
Well, I think that those two really do have to be on board, or we have to be on board with them in terms of priorities. And I think we need to look at what they are trying to accomplish, what their goals are. As I said, most of these countries have another agenda. The Saudis are mostly worried about Iran, the Turks more about the Kurds and so on. But they both are united in the fact that Assad has to go before you can make any real progress against ISIS. I think we need to listen to them if we want them to be active and aggressive members of the coalition. But the reality is, you know, you hear people talk about sending combat formations from Arab nations into Iraq to fight ISIS. That's just not going to happen. First, they are not going to send their troops, not willing to send their troops. But second, the Iraqis probably wouldn't allow them to come anyway. You've got an Iranian influenced government in Baghdad, and the notion that they would invite Saudi or Gulf State troops into their country to fight what is an internal fight in their eyes, I think is very unrealistic.
Whether you realize it or not, or maybe what, it's only what I'm hearing, but you seem to be painting a picture that then inevitably says, well, the U.S. is going to have no choice but to...
So it'll be a cold day in hell. It will be a cold day in hell before you see a Saudi or a Qatari boot on the ground in Syria. Trust us on that, okay? They'll go nowhere near that. So the fact that these guys, this is someone on Meet the Press, I mean, that's a major big show, and they have this, the level of the idiocracy media is just off the charts. These are the experts, and it's just one after another. You just watch it all day on TV. None of them know anything. So they're talking about, you know, we need, well, can we get Arab boots on the ground? And, you know, we need to get the Arabs involved. What do you think the Syrians are? Arabs? Yes, they're Arabs. Syrian soldiers, hundreds of thousands of them. They're Arabs. They're Sunnis. They're Shiites. They're Christians, whatever. They're Arabs. Incredible. So they're talking about, like, if Assad's this dictator and he's got an iron grip on the country, blah, blah, blah. Why do you think all these hundreds of thousands of Syrians are sacrificing their life to fight a foreign insurgency that's been funneled into their country with the backing of the United States, the backing of Turkey and their allies and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait and all the rest? How do you think the Syrians feel about that? Do you think they're on our side? Do you think they're looking favorably on the West, sending TOW missiles and terrorist fighters, violent, killing people, destroyed their country, destroyed it? And you have these idiots sitting back still musing, fantasizing, trying to paint a picture of a reality in their own mind about Assad this, Assad that. This is a repeat of Iraq. They did the same thing with Saddam Hussein. It was Saddam. They call him by his first name, Saddam. They don't call Bashar by his first name. Do you notice that? They call him Assad by his last name. But before it was Saddam. Now, Putin. This is a trick of the West. This is brainwashing. So the people who fall for this, there's even media operatives that have been brainwashed. Okay. Absolutely brainwashed into sort of buying all this stuff. unbelievable. It's absolutely incredible. There's no end to it. There's no end to it. This, how dangerous is this? This is getting to a point. It's so dangerous now. They have made such a dangerous environment. They have armed and put weapons in the hands of killers. Cold-blooded killers, religious zealots with U.S. weapons. How dangerous is this? Shame on the United States for doing this time and time again. You did this with the Mujahideen. You did it with Al-Qaeda. That gave you the Taliban. And then you go and you bomb and occupy Afghanistan and yada, yada, yada. On and on it goes. And you've done it here in Syria. You've done it again. You've done it again. And anybody who still falls for this and believes it, like, oh, we have nothing to do with that. You're kidding me. You're so naive. You're hopeless. You're hopeless. So who's to Turkey? Erdogan, the president, his son Bilal, is been featured in a few online news articles here. Involved what in the selling of oil? ISIS oil? That's interesting. And there's another company in there. Well, we talked about that last week, I think. Well, Janelle Energy, the British government-backed company. They're buying what? Oil from ISIS. Wow. So the British are in the frame. So David Cameron's all gung-ho. He wants to go to war. So we have to ask David, well, what's the deal with Janelle Energy? And I believe a member of the Rothschild family runs that company. Go ahead and look it up. Put in Janelle. G-E-N-E-L. Janelle Energy. Put ISIS oil and Rothschild. Put that in Google. See what you find. Just punch that in. Okay. So that was actually a report. It was commissioned by, I think it was Middle East Eye on this very subject. I mean, it's pretty damning. Absolutely damning. But, you know, we could get into that a little deeper. So go ahead and this is Turkey and oil. Where do we start? Well, Cameron wants to go to war. Go ahead and listen to David. Audio clip one. So here's David on the rampage.
Meanwhile, in an attempt to try to convince lawmakers to back airstrikes against ISIL in Syria, British Prime Minister David Cameron has been grilled for more than 2 hours in Parliament. Some MPs wanted to know how legal such an operation would be and whether it could lead to some unintended consequences.
Does the Prime Minister believe that the United Nations Security Resolution 2249 gives clear and unambiguous authorization for UK airstrikes? And in the absence of any coordinated UN military or diplomatic strategy, does he believe that more military forces over Syria could increase the risks of dangerous incidents such as the shooting down of a Russian military aircraft by Turkish forces this week?
But David Cameron said launching air raids against Islamic State would be an act of self-defence.
Why should we take ISIL's campaign against the UK and our allies has reached the level of an armed attack, such that force may lawfully be used in self-defence?
Meanwhile, thousands of people gathered outside 10 Downing Street in London on Saturday protesting against the possible airstrikes. More than a dozen other demonstrations were held across the country. Former senior naval officer Chris Parry thinks the United Nations should take the lead now in solving the Syrian.
Okay, so David, I'm going to ask you, if I was in Parliament, I'd be up there at question time and I would say, I've got a question for the right honourable gentleman there from Oxford. Let's talk about Britain's secret ties to firms that are behind ISIS oil sales. Let's talk about that. Is it true, Prime Minister? Is it true that key allies in the U.S. and U.K. coalition in the war on ISIS against the so-called Islamic State that's not a state. In fact, every time you call it a state, you're empowering it. Is it true that the UK and the US and its allies are covertly financing the terrorist movement? Is that true? Is it true that US and British oil companies are heavily invested in the murky geopolitical triangle there that's sustaining ISIS's black market oil sales? Is it true? Is it true? Is it true that the KRG, the Kurdish regional government in Iraq, and Turkish military intelligence, MIT, have both supported secret ISIS oil smuggling operations and even supplied arms to terrorist groups? Is it true? Is it true that one British oil company, Genel Energy, which is contracted by the KRG, the Kurdish regional government, to supply oil for a major Kurdish firm accused of facilitating ISIS oil sales into Turkey? Is that true? And if that's true, is Genel, are they operating in with the KRG? Are they doing that with the backing of the British government then? And is this also linked to a British parliamentary group with long-standing connections to both British and KRG oil industries? And is the relationship between the British and the Kurdish energy companies, does that link to senior British politicians? Does this not, right honorable gentlemen, raise the question about the conflicts of interest, especially in the context of the war on terror, that is supposed to be targeting, not financing, ISIS? How do you answer that, sir? And a silence drops in the room. And everyone says, well, looks like it's time for tea. So there we go, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're left with at the end of the day. That's what we're left with. Absolute, total collusion. It's not just Turkey. It's Britain. It's the United States actually doing business with terrorist entities with the full knowledge and backing of our governments. That means arrest them all, lock them up, throw away the key. They are part of the problem, not, and they should not be allowed to be part of their solution if they themselves are part of the problem. That's justice. That's justice. We're going to take a short break and connect our guest, Finian Cunningham, on the other side. We're going to take a short break. This is the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Hennington. Stay right there. Tune in Sundays at noon Eastern Time or 9 a.m. Pacific Time for the Sunday Wire for 3 hours of action-packed talk radio on 21stCenturyWire.com and AlternateCurrentRadio.com.
Get out of here, you low-life scum.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
always said that I have required. And the days of vanity went on forever. And he saw his days burn up like paper and fire.
Weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharp Tech, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharp Tech, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharptech.org.
Spartans! What is your profession?
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Been a long time gone, old Constantinople, still it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople is an Istanbul.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and also at 21stCenturyWire.com and also at iTunes. And after the live broadcast, you can go ahead to the site and we'll have the download available soon after. But you can listen to the recording minutes after the show and also download a little bit later. But thank you for joining us. Before the break, we were just kind of talking about where we're just trying to put into – it's very hard to squeeze so many lies through such a small funnel. And I don't know really how to describe it. It's becoming more and more difficult. We are swimming in a sea of lies and deception with regards to the political narratives and the mainstream media narratives with regards to what's going on in Syria, in Turkey, in the region. I'm going to bring on our next guest. He's an independent journalist. He's based in East Africa at the moment, but he moves around quite a bit. His name is Finian Cunningham, and we've got a link to his work up on our show page right now. There's a link to Sputnik News, to his author's page, but we've also got other articles that we're looking at as well. One of them is the Noose Titans on Turkey's Sultan of Swing. And we're not talking about referring to the Dire Straits track there. We're talking about President Erdogan of Turkey, who is a man under somewhat of a microscope at the moment after the shoot down of the Russian aircraft earlier in the week, and rightfully so. As soon as we tip this rock, we find more and more unsavory things underneath. with regards to Turkey. So we're going to welcome our Finian. Finian, are you there?
Yes, Patrick, I am there, and thanks very much for having me on your show. Good day to you and your listeners.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Finian. And you're a long way away right now. So there's about 10,000 miles between us right now. We're live on the Alternate Current Radio Network, and I've got your let's get straight to it, Finian. I mean, before the break, you know, I was talking about how this incident, which has happened this week, as if there wasn't enough going on, how this is being framed and used in such a way by, especially by the United States and its allies, to somehow accelerate another wing of their agenda, which they would like to roll out. And looking at the Sultans of Swing, President Erdogan is under extreme scrutiny right now, as is his son and many other aspects of what seems to be a kind of a mafia state running lots of various black market activities with regards to the terrorist groups running amok in Syria and northern Iraq. I don't know where to start with Turkey, because the more I look here, the worse it gets. The picture gets worse by the minute when you start looking into what Turkey's been up to. We've been talking about this for a long time, but it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. I think people were overloaded with the whole concept of ISIS and everything, that they couldn't comprehend that a NATO ally, a NATO member, would be so involved in the sort of the deeper aspects of this. Tell us your thoughts on this.
Well, Patrick, I mean, I think you've laid it out very, very cogently there and in your introduction. I mean, I think the problem is that the Western media are so complicit in telling lies. They're a propaganda service. It's not a journalistic service, as they presume and, you know, arrogantly proclaim to be, you know, the fifth state and free press and all that stuff. I mean, they're a propaganda system. So what's going on in Syria for the last 4.5 years, nearly 5 years, is just a complete, you know, travesty compared with how the Western media are portraying it. I mean, it's a criminal conspiracy of regime change, which the Western powers, the NATO powers, are up to their eyes in. And it's coming to, I think it's coming to light now with the, you know, the situation in Syria. The protagonists who have been involved in this conspiracy are now being flushed out, largely because of the Russian military intervention there. But the person you mentioned there in particular, the Turkish regime led by Erdogan, I mean, they're really being exposed now as a major player in fueling this covert criminal conspiracy. But why it might seem disorientating to your average citizen in the West is because the Western media have been so complicit in distorting and concealing what's going on there. So, you know, it kind of makes it a little bit disorientating when the reality is coming to the surface, because people have been so misled for so long, for 5 years, by the Western media as to what's really going on in Syria.
Sure, and then also with regards to Turkey, just cycling back to Turkey now. So this the G20 and the timing of this, I mean, I don't want to get too much into Paris, but we had the Paris attacks 2 weeks ago. We had the G20 literally like two or three days after in Turkey. And of course, terrorism is at the top of the agenda. And and then this happens a week later. And the timing of it is incredible.
Yeah, sorry to cut in on you, Patrick, but I think that was a pivotal moment. You know, when Putin addressed the G20 summit and started to, you know, put names in the, you know, in the pot about who is fueling these jihadi terrorists in Syria, and he mentioned G20 members. Now, I don't know about you, but I think there was a very palpable moment there of shame by the backers of these jihadis. Now, we're talking about Washington, London, Paris, NATO, and in the region, especially Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. Mm-hmm. Now, Putin fingered these state sponsors of terrorism, and there was a moment of real, cringing embarrassment when he pointed this out. Now, within days, then Turkey has now kicked out with his revenge hit on the Russian fighter jet this past week. And I think it's because Putin is tightening the noose on these state sponsors, in particular Turkey, but they're all there in the role of dishonor and shame, and will be revealed eventually. But Turkey certainly is in the front line of firing, and I think that's significant. The G20 summit that you mentioned there, Putin started to name names, and it caused a lot of, awkward embarrassment.
Mm. And so let's cut as far as Turkey goes. Let's cut right to the chase. Turkey has been behind the policy of regime change from the word go. We now know their prime minister, yeah, their president's come out and said that anybody who, and he was talking to Russia, anybody who's helping the Assad regime will be held accountable, right, later in history or something like that, he said. Okay, and so what is Turkey going to get if the Syrian government falls, if Damascus falls, and it becomes a kind of an unstable failed state like a Libya, for instance, and it'll go through this chaotic transition? Turkey is getting what? Territory? They're going to take a chunk of land. They're going to be able to fortify whatever their aspirations are, in terms of gerrymandering the Kurdish population. What's the payoff for Turkey?
Well, there probably are various, perceived gains, like as you mentioned, there redrawn borders that Turkey would claim to possess historically in northern Syria. It's not my field of expertise, but it's out there that there are plans for gas and oil pipelines from the Gulf, Saudi and Qatar, going up via Syria, via Turkey into Europe. The Turks are probably have got vested interests in that. Erdogan himself, he's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. They've got this very extreme Sunni version, extreme version of Islam. There's this probably, it seems that he's got this kind of like a twisted romantic notion about expanding the Turkey as a new regional power with this kind of revision of neo-Ottomanism. So the guy's got a lot of ego in there.
The Sultan complex. He's got a Sultan complex.
Yeah, but I want to go back a wee bit, Patrick. I mean, you're dead right. I mean, Turkey has been, they're really up to their eyes in it. I mean, they all are. Washington, London, Paris, the Saudis, the Qataris, and Turkey, they're up to their eyes in sponsoring terrorism. I mean, I'll just kind of like mention last year, in the village of Kesab in northwestern Syria, in April of 2014, just a year ago, there was a massive invasion across the border from Turkey. It wasn't covered much in the Western mainstream media, of course, but the Turks were directly involved in that massive assault on the town of Kesab, and they slaughtered the town. I mean, most of the inhabitants managed to flee out of the town, but the the people, the elderly people, the immobile people who were left behind were slaughtered. I think the death toll was near 90. And they occupied it for 3 months before the Syrian army retook it. Now, the Turks were state military, were directly involved in that massacre. I mean, the massacre was carried out on the ground by the jihadis, and we're talking about al-Nusra, IS, also the so-called Free Syrian Army. They were all involved as an amalgam, and they were instrumented and backed up by the Turk military. Now, Erdogan was directly involved in that cross-border infraction, which was a massacre. And that's just one example, but it clearly evidences their complicity in this covert war of regime change in Syria. If you just look into the details of that massacre in Kaysab, it totally it incriminates the AK party of Recep Erdogan as a party to the war of terrorism on Syria.
Yeah, and the fact that they're a member of NATO, I mean, NATO is meant to be a prestigious multilateral international organization with, top world powers as members. And they've got Turkey, which is kind of the rump. It's the rump of NATO. It was very controversial when Turkey joined NATO. I mean, it wasn't seen by everybody as an altogether positive thing. And now I know why. Because it is a very lawless country, on many levels in terms of black market trade. The black market in Turkey, some might argue, is rivaling the legitimate market in many sectors. But this is a kind of a mafia state in a sense that, there seems to be a lot of power concentrated into, very few hands. This is not uncommon in the Middle East. Or in Africa, this is a norm, but I think they're there to have a beachhead. That gives NATO a beachhead in the Middle East. Now we have a crisis with NATO. Now we have a huge crisis because this is a crisis of legitimacy after this incident, because it's been proven, Finian, now we found out, and the U.S. is even admitting it, this plane was shot down, in Syrian airspace. So this has been admitted, and it's doubtful that it was ever in Turkish airspace. And even if it was, the missile fired by the F-16 connected and hit and destroyed their Russian fighter in Syrian airspace. So technically, this is a violation of international law. And so the U.S. is trying to backpedal right now, because initially they came out blaming Russia. So where is this going to leave NATO in the end? And because NATO is very busy, they're quite active up and down the this corridor, the Eurasian corridor. I think it's becoming more and more. It's looking like a redundant organization. It's looking like they're lost. NATO is like they're like a 20th century relic, really, if you think about it. So this is a problem. This is a problem right now.
Yeah, it's a really serious question, Patrick. I mean, what was the level of involvement of Washington and Pentagon in that ambush of that Su-24, the Russian bomber this week in Syrian territory? I believe it wasn't Syrian territory, and it was just a blatant ambush by a NATO member, Turkey. Now, it is a very, very troubling question. I mean, was Washington there's a lot of evidence to point that Washington was colluding in this ambush. Now, does that mean that they are pushing for a war with Russia? I mean, this is a very serious dynamic that they're pushing. I mean, if they're involved like that contriving an incident like as they have done in years gone by with Vietnam, the famous or notorious incident that sparked the Vietnam War.
That, that was the Gulf of Tonkin. The Gulf of Tonkin incident. Yeah, yeah, completely staged, yeah, totally fake. That was basically fast-tracked overnight. They passed emergency legislation, didn't even verify whether it really happened or not. It was just a done deal, and they moved forward with it. So that could have, this could have been like a Gulf of Tonkin type situation, right?
Yeah. So that, that kind of really raises troubling questions. I mean, are people in Washington, you know, in the military-industrial complex, are they willing, are they serious about gambling on a war with Russia? Because if a war starts with Russia, I mean, you know, it's going to end, it's just going to end catastrophically. It's, you know, we're talking about nuclear powers here. And are there people so crazy within the military industrial complex to salvage their bankrupt, you know, American empire? Would they go that far? It certainly looks like there are some crazy people who would be willing to do that, because this ambush of the Russian Su-24 this week in Syria was an egregious provocation. That's all you can take out of it. I mean, if I was Vladimir Putin and his circle and his advisors in the Kremlin, it would be really troubling to ponder what the Western powers are really trying to, what their agenda is, what they're striving to do. Because, you know, to shoot down a Russian fighter jet that's legitimately in Syria because of the Syrian government's request for it, for Russia to be involved, I mean, that is a really outrageous, you know, provocation. And, you know, it's very troubling that there are some people that seem to be willing to gamble on igniting a major, you know, a conflagration.
Yes, yeah, indeed. And then, okay, now you know a little bit about, you've done a little bit of looking into the issue of black market oil trading with regards to Russia. We talked about some of the Western firms that are actually, we believe, are involved in this. One of them was Genel Energy, a British company, which we talked about in the last hour. But here's the thing with regards to the U.S. Now, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of trucks. We keep hearing this in the U.S. media. ISIS has all this oil, and they're the richest terrorist group in history, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's hundreds of oil trucks. They're making 1.5 million a day on black market oil trading, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Now, you can't tell me that the United States, couldn't see convoys of 100 trucks a day through their satellite network, a surveillance network. Yeah. And be able to pass on that information after the last 18 months of airstrikes against ISIS that we're told they were doing, that this couldn't have happened at any time, and all of a sudden Russia hits the oil supply, and all of a sudden this happens. So it's incredible.
So well said by you, Patrick. I mean, that really puts the spotlight on this whole charade that's been going on, I mean, for the last year or more, where the US-led coalition is supposed to be taking on this ISIS terrorist network. And yet, as you say, there was a virtual oil industry, like thousands of trucks transiting, you know, at least three countries, Iraq, Syria, and then Turkey, and then reversing with trucks with weapons, I mean, thousands of trucks with weapons from Turkey into Syria, and that was admitted by their own, by a Turkish state prosecutor just recently. He happened to admit this, that there was, you know, thousands of trucks with the Turk military intelligence, this MIT, the National Intelligence Organization, in Turk acronym is MIT, and they've been totally facilitating this weapons flow southwards into Syria. So you've got this vast system of, you know, transaction, like oil, smuggled artifacts going into Turkey from Syria and Iraq, and then the weapons going down south. And as you say, it's just ludicrous. It just beggars belief that the NATO powers, with all their satellite communications, didn't know this was going on. I mean, it's just a rhetorical question. It doesn't even deserve an answer, because the answer is just, you know, it's a no-brainer. Of course, they must have known this huge industry of oil and weapons was taking place. No, it's just because of the Russian recent involvement of since 30th of September, and they have been really exposing what's going on. The West now is kind of running, scrambling to try to, you know, either, you know, kind of obfuscate what's they have been colluding in, and, you know, like actually trying to step up their bombing of IS. The French and the Americans have been very laterally bombing oil trucks, allegedly, you know. But I mean, why weren't they doing this for the whole past 18 months or so? Obviously, it's because they were complicit in this contraband, you know, this whole illicit industry to fuel their covert war for regime change. But it's just because of the Russian involvement that, you know, that they're being exposed.
Yeah. And so, I talked about this a couple months ago with RT. I just said that it's like there's been a party going on, and someone just came in. One of the parents came in and flicked the light switch on, and everybody's standing around like, oh no, you know, this is kind of what happened on September the 30th. Is essentially like that. You know, they've been able to operate in the dark, in the gray areas, levels mm-hmm. of deniability, and the clandestine agencies working with organized crime. And we're trying to tell this, give a painting of this picture to our listeners, in past weeks. And it's not an easy picture to paint, because a lot of it is obscured. It's obscured through classified activities, obscured through organized crime, through mafia, through black markets, and through a lot of intimidation going on. You have terrorist groups operating, you know, freely in whole areas and regions. I mean, it's not a safe place for journalists to be working. It's not a place for government to be doing it administrating. This is, a lot can go on.
Yeah.
In these zones,
the Western media, Patrick, in addition to all what you've said, the Western media have just, you know, they're just, you know, running a massive omission campaign. I mean, telling anything about what's happening in Syria. I mean, it's on the record. It's not like as if you have to investigate classified. Documents and you know, it's very obscure. It's on the record. Like, France in particular has weaponized these so-called rebels in Syria going back 3 years, at least 2012. François Hollande, the French president, has admitted it at least twice, that they have put weapons into Syria, like heavy weapons, machine guns, artillery, and the Western media, you know, have not really explored this, and you know, with a little bit of an investigation probing around, you could look into easily, you know, trace the weapons trail from not only France but the other NATO powers as well, including the United States. It could be so easily done, but the Western media have just, you know, blanked out a huge chunk of the picture. So the Western consumer of that kind of information would be really ignorant and benighted about what's really happening. I mean, if the Western media actually did the job of journalism, they would be reporting on, you know, factual links with Western governments, military intelligence, their own, you know, weapons companies, and how these 30,000 foreign jihadis, mercenaries, have been weaponized in Syria and Iraq. I mean, it would be such a great, huge story. It needs to be covered, but the Western media are just not covering it. They're completely concealing, glaring facts. So it's very disorientating for your average Western citizen who consumes that kind of information. They would not have a clue about how these jihadis, these terrorists, have been weaponized and, you know, facilitated to try to destroy a country. But it's there. The information is there. It's just that the Western media have been an absolute disgrace in that they're totally omitting a major narrative of what's going on in Syria. And of course, that's not perhaps not surprising, because they're just fulfilling a political function of propagandizing on behalf of their Western governments.
And when I presented this information to some people that might have not seen it before, I mean, the initial reaction is shock. You know, they're like, well, I can't believe it. And the reason they're shocked, Finian, is because they haven't seen this yet or been exposed to it on their news outlets like CNN or ABC, CBS or Fox or New York Times or whatever. And you see a bit in the print journals, you know, it does pop up here and there, but none of the print journals ever pull it all together and make an editorial policy and take an editorial line that says, right, this is really dodgy. We need to pull this all together. And because this is not in our interest, how come this doesn't happen anymore in the media? Because, I mean, you've worked in what I would call mainstream, organizations and media before, and throughout the years. Is the culture changed now, or is it just that the press has been neutered, or how come papers can't come together and hold the government to account, let's say, on the policy? Like The Guardian, The Independent are horrible on their coverage of Syria. It's ghastly. It's embarrassing to read, actually. And I would look to those publications as to be the vanguard to hold the government to account with their whatever their dealings are, creating this problem in Syria. I mean, what's gone on? Where did the disconnect to ever take place here?
Oh, I don't know, Patrick. That's a huge question. I mean, but I'll tell you this. That's why I resigned from the mainstream media. You know, I was in a job in Ireland working for The Independent, and I just got so disillusioned with its lack of coverage on really important issues. Well, primarily it was the occupation of Iraq, the murderous occupation, genocidal war in Iraq conducted by the United States and Britain. And, you know, the mainstream media, you know, were just kind of like covering it as if it was something normal. Well, that's kind of like completely, alienated me from working in that kind of media. And I resigned. It cost me a lot of problems, like resigning, you know, like personal, you know, cost of leaving your job. But, the Western media is just a travesty. I think it's really lost its way totally. It's just become so much more propagandistic and servile in its information function. There's just such a dearth of critical intelligence from the media. I mean, I think I'm not sure, Patrick, but I'll have to talk about this another time. But I mean, I think one thing is it's very hard to kind of run a really genuine journalistic service in a capitalist environment where the profit, the financial profit, dictates everything. I mean, media organizations have just been cutting back left, right and center to save costs. You know, staff have been just wiped out, downsized, and it's led to a concentration and a dependence on a few, you know, big names. You know, so say CNN and the New York Times, whatever their run or cover or line on things are, then, you know, the rest of the media tend to follow along because they don't have the manpower or resources yet because of cost cutting. And they're just kind of being, it's a bit lazy and it's kind of, cheap journalism. They're just going with the flow and, just kind of peddling, you know, I mean, I remember in my days of working in the mainstream media, you know, you just switch on the TV, see what CNN, see what BBC are saying, and then that pretty much forms your, you know, the parameters of your sort of coverage. And so there's a lot of kind of, because of, you know, cheap journalism, because of the capitalist system dictating, you know, that profit must be paramount, that then it kind of, it leads to sort of a journalism that's just really regurgitating what, you know, a few of the big channels are saying. You know, it's a kind of a herd mentality sets in. I mean, that's just a bit of a stab at kind of giving you an answer there. But the thing is, Patrick, that it's leading to a really travesty of you know, coverage of something like Syria. I mean, the Western media, you know, have just totally you know, obscured or omitted the big picture, the real picture of what's going on there. That it's a Western-led criminal conspiracy to destabilize a government with the use of terrorist proxies, and Turkey is right in there, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the NATO powers. Now, the Western media, you know, should be covering that. I mean, there's plenty of evidence to back that up. There'd be huge, you know, really juicy stories there for the Western media to kind of delve into. But they've so neglected, like obscured, omitted that huge picture. And that then leads to a confusion amongst, you know, the West, your average Western citizen, because they're being told, oh, we're fighting terrorism. And, you know, like at the G20 summit, your man Erdogan and the Saudi leadership, can you believe it? They actually chimed in with denunciations of what seemed to be the terrorist massacre in Paris. Now, these actors are up to their eyes in sponsoring jihadi terrorism in Syria and elsewhere, and yet they have the gall to stand up there and to denounce terrorism. But for, I mean, it's galling to you and me, and I'm sure a lot of your readers here or listeners here are informed, but to your average Western citizen, consumer of Western mainstream media, they wouldn't really pick up on the huge contradiction there, the glaring contradiction, because they've just been fed such a diet of lies and misinformation about what's going on in Syria. But the thing is, Patrick, that I think this is what is really, in a way, I don't mean exciting because that sounds a bit glib, but what's really kind of like, what's the word? Like, it's what's really, you know, kind of interesting about the Russian intervention. It's only 7 or 8 weeks old, this military intervention in Syria. But it's really flushing out who is involved in Syria. You know, who are the protagonists? Who are the sponsors of this regime change operation? And Turkey's been flushed out. And you'll see down the line, you know, the others too.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you saw the Russian journalist, Roman, I can't pronounce his last name, but he did a lot of coverage in Donetsk, you know, during the siege at Donetsk over the last couple of years, and he was working in Syria, and he was with his translator, and they got hit by a missile, their convoy, this past week, and this happened at about the same time as the shootdown of the plane in Latakia. Yeah. And so they took fire. I think one of the journalists had shrapnel, and had to be taken out in Russia. But, in fact, I'm going to go ahead and play this clip, Finney, and this is, audio clip three. So go ahead and listen here. This is just RT, just a quick rehash of what happened. Go ahead and roll that audio clip three.
Now, Russian journalists came under fire in Syria this week, their car narrowly avoiding a direct missile strike. RT reporters were among those injured. Well, the attack took place in the northern Syrian region of Latakia as the journalists were passing through a mountain village held by government forces. It came from the direction of the town of Salma, which is to the east of the site and controlled by rebels.
Давай, давай.
Well, a video posted online allegedly shows Syrian rebels firing an American-made anti-tank missile at the car carrying the Russian journalist. We can show you the moment, too, when a Syrian rebel supposedly fires on the convoy. Two of the correspondents were in one of the cars, and you can see one of them in the red circle running for cover there a little earlier. Well, fortunately, the journalists have now returned safely to Russia, though clearly shaken by the attack.
Very happy to be home. Can't wait to see my family. That was the hardest thing to do, is to let my family know what happened to me.
I just want to say sorry for my wife, for my family. good, everything good.
We were attacked from an opposite mountain from where we were. That place is still controlled by the international terrorist groups. The rocket that landed on us, I couldn't tell whether it was moderate or not, but the explosion was quite loud, and we did receive a concussion. Sargon here, he still has a piece of shrapnel in his body. You know, when something like that happens to you, I don't know what's moderate and what's not. You know, we were attacked. We were clearly marked as journalists in accordance.
Yeah, attacked journalist. We saw them because they shoot at first the first rocket, and then the second one, and then third, fourth, and fifth one.
And I also want to add that as soon as the news came out about us being shot in Syria, so-called opposition groups in Syria posted our photos online.
Yes.
Right away with the words of, you know, kill them. What else?
We'll find you.
We'll find you. So we were threatened. After we were after we were shot at, we were additionally threatened by local terrorist groups or international terrorist groups, and our pictures are now posted online everywhere with words, you know, kill these guys.
Meanwhile, the French president has been touring a range of countries throughout the week, calling on major world powers to unite in the face of the terror threat. On Thursday, François Hollande met President...
Okay, yeah, so sorry. So Finian, yeah, that was the... Did you hear what they said? They said that when this incident happened, the so-called moderate opposition groups posted their photos, and this has been done with almost all of the Russian journalists, Murad Gazniev as well, who was a correspondent for RT. He received death threats, so that they're passing around their photos, saying, basically putting a bounty on the journalists, okay? This is nasty stuff. I mean, this is not playtime. You know, and I hear a lot of U.S. Radio hosts and people really popping off on these issues and talking about it like it's some sort of a video game. This is like serious business, and I don't see any U.S. media coming to the aid or, you know, having common cause with journalists who are just there reporting, okay? Russia Today journalists, are the ones I've met, are, for the most part, I'd say, fantastic level, quality and professionalism, and, you know, putting themselves out in really places that I don't see CNN going. I don't see any of the U.S. majors going at all. I don't see them going there. Yeah. Sometimes I see Nick Payton Walsh. She's in sort of hot zones now and again, but probably with a much better support network than what RT has, because they're not a huge, they're a good size media outlet, but they're not nothing like CNN or any of these, the BBC. They're not on that level in terms of budgets and size, you know. So, that sent chills down my spine, because I thought, wow, they got hit, they survived, and then they're getting threatened afterwards. You know, unbelievable.
Thanks, Patrick, for sharing that clip with me. I hadn't heard that until now, you know, but that's really sinister. And it kind of actually reminds me of in Ukraine, you know, the journalists who were being killed there in eastern Ukraine were Russian journalists who were trying to cover that war, you know, last year. It's kind of sort of subsided a wee bit in recent months, although there's, as you were saying earlier on to me, latterly it's kind of blowing up again. But, I mean, the journalists who were paying with their lives there in eastern Ukraine were the Russians. And you know, again, in Syria, there is really, you know, abominable that they're being targeted in such a way. But it does kind of show you how, the double standards, the hypocrisy, the cynicism of Western, you know, so-called claims of standards in human rights and you know, legal principles. I mean, you know, they're just, you know, I've seen zero coverage on you know, this attack on Russian journalists. But, you know, if it was an attack on a Western journalist by a designated enemy of the West, I mean, the Western media would be just saturated with coverage of that. So it just shows you how expedient and really subjective and self-serving the Western establishments are, you know, the media, the governments. You know, they'll just highlight whenever it suits their agenda. But, you know, in the case of like a Russian news crew getting hit in Syria, there's no interest in it. And the other aspect is that it kind of again exposes this complete fallacy of, you know, moderate rebels, because the guys in your clip were saying that they were hit by so-called, you know, moderate rebels. And I mean, to people who are informed, it's not surprising, because this is just the greatest myth of the last 4.5 years, that there's this kind of like sort of dichotomy that there's these extremist rebels and then there's these moderate secular rebels that we can do business with. I mean, that's just such a sham, a charade. From what I've learned out of talking to people in Syria, it's just a complete illusion. The whole crowd of those so-called fighters are all, you know, extremists. I mean, this Free Syrian Army that they lionize in the Western media are just as crazy head-chopping as the Islamic State and the al-Nusra. They're driven by this, you know, warped version of Islam, this Wahhabi, you know, version of Islam that's, I don't even want to put Islam in the same bracket of words. It's just a warped death cult. And the Free Syrian Army are just as motivated by that, those kind of, you know, sort of, that's kind of ideology as the Islamic State and the al-Nusra and hundreds of other sort of like Islamist brigades. So, the West is just, it's just been lying so brazenly, you know, and so systematically to the Western population. It's leading to a huge, you know, embarrassing revelation now, whenever the parts of the jigsaw puzzle are starting to come together and we're beginning to see the involvement of the Western governments and their NATO allies, you know, exactly who they're colluding with. And it's going to be a huge, day of reckoning.
Mm. So let's talk about Turkey again for a minute. Now, let's talk about, in the last week, I have seen tons and tons of reports, not the first time, by the way, that I've seen a crackdown on journalists in Turkey. And so immediately after the Russian air incident there, where Turkey shot down the Russian plane, and the oil talking point started to come out. A lot of journalists and a lot of people in Turkey started coming out of the woodwork saying, actually, we know about this. Mm. We want to talk about this. And there's been a brutal crackdown by the Erdogan government and media crackdown. Tell us what you know about this, because I'm a little, I don't know enough about it, but have you heard anything along these lines?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got, you know, very, very deep, insightful information for you, Patrick, and your listeners. But I was just, you know, looking into it, to a route on it, But the editor of Cumhuriyat newspaper, it's an opposition newspaper, the editor, a man called Khan Dundar, he was arrested and is charged with these really trumped up, you know, charges of spy, you know, espionage and, you know, kind of betraying state secrets, only because his newspaper very bravely ran a series of reports last year that totally exposed the Turkish state intelligence as operating this guns, the weapons trail into Syria. The newspaper had actually photographic and video evidence of these trucks that were stopped near the border with Syria, and inside the trucks was not humanitarian aid that the Erdogan's regime was claiming that they were sending into Turkey to Turkmen people and, you know, affiliated ethnic groups inside Syria that the Turk government calls brothers and sisters. But these trucks, these so-called humanitarian aid trucks, were filled with you know, heavy weapons, you know, and other sources are saying that, you know, thousands of these trucks. I mean, this is a massive industry of a cross-border you know, weapons supply into Syria. So this newspaper, Cumhuriyet, they're associated with the opposition party, you know, kind of a leftist opposition party, the CHP party, the Republican People's Party, and the editor, because he ran these stories, which were, you know, really substantial stories and well backed up, and, you know, had really, you know, irrefutable evidence to back them up. It wasn't just kind of salacious speculation. Like, they were really hard stories. And anyway, the Erdogan's regime has now detained this editor and another colleague of this newspaper, you know, and leveling these really ridiculous charges at them that they're betraying state secrets and subverting the government. Now, that really shows you how degenerate this Turkish government is. I mean, and this is a government that's part of NATO and is being, you know, embraced by the European Union. You know, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel was been visiting Turkey recently with a, you know, huge donation from the EU of $3.5 billion to help with the refugee problem. You know, they have actually.
Oh my God. That's money.
Yeah,
where do you think that money is going to go, Finian? $3.5 billion, right?
Yeah. Well,
is that going to go straight into someone's pocket? I can just see it, you know?
Yeah. We're kind of digressing here, so bring me back. But I'll just say this, that, I mean, a lot of these refugee camps that the Turks have set up are actually training camps for these jihadis, whether they're called al-Nusra, Islamic State, or the Free State, Syrian Army. These refugee camps are really training camps for these fighters. You know, they've been recruited out of Syria, and some of these fighters are Syrian. Most of them are foreigners. But these refugee camps have been kind of used as bases to facilitate families and, you know, resting places for these fighters to come back to. So with this money coming from Europe, this $3.4 billion to Turkey to, you know, manage these refugee camps, I have no doubt that a large chunk of that money will be effectively being used to run these training camps for these Islamist fighter terrorists who are going back into Syria to destroy that country. So we're talking about a really dirty, you know, a cesspit of corruption and collusion and complicity and, you know, The EU is actually, you know, bankrolling, you know, well, they have been previously with, you know, their own bilateral involvement in Syria, you know, the French and the British, but now, like, the European Union as a bloc is going to be complicit in fueling, you know, jihadi terrorism against a sovereign country. So, like, how degrading, how corrupting is that? But, sorry, Patrick, I'll just go back a wee bit. We were saying about, what were we talking previously?
We were talking about the press freedom, the crackdown on the media.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, you know, the Turkey is really coming across as a banana republic, and maybe that's even the wrong term to use, but it's just a really, you know, degenerate state that Europe is kind of embracing, that's a member of NATO. I mean, they're cracking down on media, and this has been going on for months. You know, because when this newspaper, Cumhuriyet, ran these stories last year, that's when the Turk regime began to shut down, you know, Twitter and various other social media to stop this information spreading out because it was so damning. So, that is a measure of how despotic this regime is, that Barack Obama considers to be one of his top five friends. It was in the news there last week. Barack Obama nominated, what do you call him, Erdogan, as one of his best buddies among five international leaders, the other being Merkel and Cameron from Britain, the Indian Prime Minister, and Erdogan, and I can't remember the fifth one. But, I mean, like, it really does kind of expose the kind of, you know, the complicity of Western governments with this really barbaric, despotic regime that Erdogan is heading up.
Yep. Yeah, I know. It's not looking good at all. It's we're going to take a short break, Finney. Are you able to stick with us for a couple minutes on the other side of the break at the top of the hour? Wanted to.
Sure, Patrick.
Yeah, because
if it suits your readers or your listeners.
I wanted to move north to the Ukraine briefly, so I want to touch on that when we come back after the break. So Finian Cunningham is going to stick with us into the overdrive. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is the Sunday Wire. Stay right there.
Sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. And now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces.
the Sultans. We're the Sultans of Swing.
Tune in Sundays at noon Eastern Time or 9 a.m. Pacific Time for the Sunday Wire for 3 hours of action-packed talk radio on 21stCenturyWire.com and AlternateCurrentRadio.com.
Who finds himself drowning in a bucket of cream has two choices. Drown or fight so hard he churns that cream into butter.
Jimmy Graham throws down hard.
And simply climbs out.
Spartans! What is your profession?
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're back into the third hour of Overdrive for the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen, and joining me is my guest, Finian Cunningham. He's an international journalist, independent global affairs analyst. And before the break, we were kind of getting into sort of the deeper, darker aspects of media crackdown, which is taking place in Turkey. But I just wanted to, he's going to continue with us for a couple more minutes into this Overdrive hour, but I wanted to comment on a story that we published, which we republished part of Counterpunch's story on this, which is a great article on Counterpunch on the, there's been some terrorist activity in the Crimea. So the right sector, the neo-Nazi, some of the paramilitary groups, which were backed by the U.S. and by NATO in order to achieve a kind of overthrow of the government in the Ukraine in February 2014. Now, these same groups are bombing the electrical grid in Crimea, causing rolling blackouts across Crimea, so basically cutting off the power into the country. And so this should be considered an act of terrorism. And to add insult to injury, we see our first reports, confirmed reports from the New York Times article that Islamic fighters, well, you could call them terrorists from Dagestan and Chechnya, have now been recruited and brought into the east of the Ukraine on behalf of the Ukrainian government in Kiev, our puppet regime that we've installed and are currently propping up, to use a term the State Department likes to use so often, propping up the regime in Kiev. They brought in the Islamic fighters, Finian. So you have Nazis and ISIS, potentially. Nazis, neo-Nazis and ISIS side by side fighting with NATO supervising, or NATO intelligence is absolutely active in the Ukraine. And I believe the CIA have a nice station they built up in Kiev, and they are absolutely giving directions and providing training. We have U.S. Special Forces providing training of some of these right sector groups in the Ukraine. Now, this isn't that far north, Finian, of Turkey. And this is what people got in America and other places don't realize, is how close in proximity a lot of these regions are. And you have a huge potential here for, you know, a multi-regional conflagration. If it escalates, and this is the thing I'm worried about. I mean, what's your take on? I know you've covered the Ukrainian issue in the past. You know, what's your take on what's happening there?
Well, Well, Patrick, I think it's all part of the same, you know, seamless belt of destabilization that Washington and its NATO allies are operating against Russia. I mean, the Syria and Ukraine are very, you know, on the same scale, or sliding scale of you know, Western, you know, kind of militarist destabilization, aggression towards Russia. So it's not at all surprising that jihadis would be, you know, shifted out of Syria and infiltrated into Ukraine. You know, these jihadis, like mainly Chechens, have been working in Syria for, you know, from the get-go, from that theater of destabilization, this US-led war of aggression on Syria. And the Chechens have been a major foreign mercenary force being deployed in Syria. So, you know, it's not at all surprising. In fact, it's perfectly logical from their point of view that these Chechen mercenaries would be then switched into, you know, Ukraine. And in Ukraine, the right sector, these neo-Nazis, the right sector group, their personnel have been involved in the war in Chechnya going back to the 1990s. The various leadership of the right sector have been, you know, cut their teeth or earned their stripes fighting, you know, guerrilla style in Chechnya. So it's the linkages are go back a long time, and it's not, you know, it shouldn't really be surprising that these linkages are becoming apparent, because they have existed for a long time, and it's all perfectly consistent with the US-led war of, you know, kind of a covert war of aggression towards Russia to destabilize Russia, to try and inflict, you know, impose a regime change in Russia. I mean, that would be the ultimate prize.
Yeah, I do think Russia, and people think, you know, when you say this to some people, the sort of people who are more mainstream indoctrinated, I say that Russia is fighting for its survival as a nation state. And I'm not, to me, that's not an exaggeration, because I look at the power plays that are going on the periphery. That's how I would be looking at it if I was Russia. This is not a benevolent force for good that is encircling Russia right now.
Well, remember, Patrick, I mean, you know, like way back in the early post-Cold War days, I mean, it was, you know, fundamental tenet of American planning, you know, American state planning, that they would not or could not tolerate the rise of a competitor power in the world, that there would be total, you know, this is all this kind of like neocon kind of you know, viewpoint here, but the America had to capitalize on the post-Cold War situation of being a unit power, and that no other competitor power could be tolerated, you know, whether it be China or a Renaissance Russia. So, you know, Putin, who's not doing anything illegal. I mean, he's just the head of a strong country with a massive potential, the economy of a you know, huge potential economic power house in the future. But this is kind of in the imperialist carve up of the world, or the imperialist view of the world, that's intolerable, because it's a kind of a zero-sum game. I mean, you've got to have all the power or nothing. So any kind of, you know, rising power is automatically defined as an enemy and must be thwarted or controlled in some way. And Putin was not in the same school of kind of legacy, kind of incompetent, feckless rulers that came with Boris Yeltsin and those kind of people, the oligarchs. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Putin has got a good, strong sense of, you know, looking after his own country and making it an autonomous, you know, power in a legitimate way. I mean, he's not doing anything illegal. But this is kind of intolerable to the West. and, you know, a country would dare to have an independent kind of policy and autonomy. So Putin is by definition an enemy, and this whole you know, operation in Ukraine to destabilize regime change in Ukraine, as with Syria, it's all tied in with the Western antagonism, or, you know, tacit war of aggression towards Russia, you know, with Vladimir Putin as the strong leader.
Yeah, and would this surprise you, Finney? And I'm just going to drop a little info bomb here. So Germany has confirmed that they have now planned, they have a 10-step plan to send 100 of their special forces, Buddhist war special forces, German troops into northern Iraq to support the Kurdish Peshmerga in the fight against ISIS. So we've got Germany is throwing its lot into the game now. So that's Britain, France, Germany, the United States, and Turkey. All the major NATO allied countries are now active in the theater, and NATO is still officially not in it. But all their member states are. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it's really shocking, Patrick. You know, that it's just compounding one, you know, egregious error on top of another. You know, lies are just compounding, and problems are just exacerbating. You know, they're just adding more and more problems to an already problematic situation. And it gets back to, you know, the deceit of the Western media. I mean, the Western media have totally misinformed and deceived the Western public en masse about what is going on, you know, the nature of the, you know, the American and British destruction of Iraq and Afghanistan, and, you know, after that, then Libya and Syria. I mean, this is kind of Western criminal conspiracy to destroy countries. And the Western media have just totally concealed or downplayed it, omitted it, and so then these Western governments are enabled to keep piling on really, you know, criminal policies and really stupid, you know, reckless, fatuous policy upon policy, you know, like France, like, has weaponized these jihadis in Syria. Now France is sending their aircraft carrier, the Charles de Gaulle, to bomb Syria. I mean, you know, it's a crass dynamic, and the Western media are very culpable in this crass dynamic, because, you know, they by lying and concealing what has been going on, allows then these governments to get away with such, you know, insane policies that the public would not tolerate for a second if they were fully informed about what is going on. But the public aren't, unfortunately, the mainstay of the Western public aren't informed by the mainstream media. And so these Western governments are just getting away with one ludicrous policy development after another.
Yes.
And you mentioned Germany there. I mean, that's just... it's just abhorrent, like, you know, this continuation of adding more fuel to a fire.
Well, what I think this is leading to, and we can talk about this at another discussion at another time. In fact, I'll send you an analysis, which I just published last night, and it's about the European army. It's about the EU army. And if you consider that NATO could get, you know, if Turkey gets dumped from NATO, being a major player, this could, and I get into the mind of the Machiavellian, because I know how their brains work. So even if they wanted to disband NATO, they would need to make a crisis as the pretext to move away from NATO to provide the solution, which is waiting in the wings, which is absolutely a done deal from my research, which is the European Union Army. And the European Border Control Agency, European Union CIA, European Union FBI, European Union, all these federalized entities are now waiting in the wings. And this is absolutely going to, it's the thing to hold Europe together. And if you look at the EU, Finian, it's fraying it to bits on so many levels, economically, politically. And if you have the right crisis, and you can then use that to bring in the glue to hold it together. And then now you have a partner force for the United States that you don't need to a NATO Article 5. All you need is a coalition and an authorization of force. You don't need declarations of war. And this is what I think is going on. That's what I think we're seeing right now, between Turkey, Syria, and all the other players. I think this is the call for the EU army and the Ukraine. This is a perfect storm right now.
It's a very interesting line of thought that you've hit me with there, Patrick. But I mean, it's just, can I just say generally, I mean, war, you know, it's just part and parcel of the capitalist system. I mean, when you look over the last 100 years, I mean, look at the conflagrations that have all come up of this capitalist, you know, imperialist rivalry and antagonism. The system is just built for war. And very sadly, tragically, we're witnessing it again, this dynamic, this configuration of all these negative, warmongering kind of factors that are coming together. It's just, you know, I mean, I hope it doesn't get to it. I mean, I really hope, of course, like, that history doesn't repeat itself. But isn't it just so telling that why is war such a shadow of our world? I mean, it's because of the capitalist system that pits, countries against each other, you know, for conflict, and it's all about, building our economies, militarism. I mean, people have got to start realizing that the capitalist system is a warmongering death system. And until we deal with the capitalist root cause of war, then this is just going to keep going on and on and on. And I really hope that we people en masse or will come to their senses. It's very difficult because the mainstream media are so lying to the people. But, you know, hopefully with the alternative media that are out there, I mean, what you're doing, Patrick, is so commendable and fantastic. There are many, many other alternative, you know, news services out there. And hopefully we will kind of, you know, bring a consciousness among the wider public that will prevent these warmongers from repeating their agenda.
Well, General Smedley Butler said it the best. He said, "War is a racket." That was his famous speech back in the 1940s. But it is a racket. It's the ultimate racket. It's the same as smashing the windows in the neighborhood, and then the glazier comes by. Oh, so it looks like your window's been smashed. So it's the same business. It's protection. It's racketeering. But there's one more that is not getting any coverage right now. I would dare say it's been blacked out, especially in the Western media coverage, and that is Yemen. What is going on in Yemen? Can you get us up to speed? I covered this a few months ago, and I've diverted from it, but there was nothing good going on with Yemen back in April and May. And do you know anything about what's going on right now? Because is it a dire situation right now?
Well, just the daily slaughter of people is it on a daily basis. Patrick, it's not actually too far from where I'm actually located in East Africa. And it's just a daily slaughter of civilians, you know, women and children. This military coalition that Washington and London are facilitating are actually colluding in, complicit in, you know, involving Saudi Arabia and these other Wahhabi Gulf state dictatorships. I mean, they're bombing this country, Yemen, and it's just the crimes that are being committed on a daily basis are just, you know, unbelievable. It's heartrending. But the really shameful thing is that there is hardly a mention in the Western media. I mean, as a journalist, you know, we cover all the channels on a daily basis. And I can tell you, like, you know, watching BBC, CNN, France 24, you know, and such, there's rarely a mention of what's going on in Yemen. But I know from other good sources that there is a slaughter going on every day where, you know, dozens of people are just killed by Saudi airstrikes that are facilitated by Washington and London. And Washington and London are right in there. It's not a kind of a vague, you know, couple of steps back kind of support. Washington, the Americans have got a fusion center set up in Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, which is the brains in coordinating these airstrikes. Some people will even tell you that the airstrikes are actually being carried out by American and British pilots. You know, the Saudis, you know, to be blunt, are so incompetent that they're, you know, the Saudi government and their, you know, the Saudi system is so incompetent, it's very doubtful that they even have fighter pilots to conduct these flights, really. And I'm not being funny, and I'm not being, you know, unduly offensive towards Saudi people, but I mean, their whole system, the whole Saudi Gulf Arab, you know, dictatorships are built on foreign labour and foreign expertise, you know, because it's such a rentier system of exploitation. They don't invest in their own people. Now, you know, the idea of these Saudi pilots bombing Yemen, I would really doubt that it is a Saudi pilot. It's probably American and British pilots doing this. Now, anyway, they're carrying out a massive slaughter every day of the Yemeni people, and there is not a mention in the Western media. Now, I really put it to anybody who's a bit agnostic about, you know, propaganda systems and what we're being talking about. Well, I would put it to that person, look, is that not a propaganda system or what? That the massive story is happening where people are being slaughtered. There's 12 million people deprived of food and water because of the blockade on Yemen. And yet, for all that suffering and terrible misery that is happening on the country, the aggression on that country, the Western media are just not covering it. I mean, CNN don't cover it. BBC hardly cover it. Al Jazeera a little bit, but not too much. You know, there's a massive, and France 24 hardly ever either. So there's a massive blanket, denial, omission of what's going on in Yemen, because it would totally incriminate the Western governments, you know, what they're doing. They're involved in a huge crime against humanity.
Mm. Yeah, it's hugely underreported.
Sorry, Patrick, just when I think of it, sorry, have I got a minute or two to come in a wee bit?
Yes.
I mean, there are good, reliable reports too, Patrick, that these jihadis that the West and their Saudi and Qatari and Turk clients, these jihadis that this complex, this US-led complex of powers have weaponized in Syria, there is good reports that a lot of these fighters are actually being relocated out of Syria into Yemen. And I think you were saying to me earlier on, into Ukraine. So there seems to be an operation here to kind of preserve their assets. They've invested billions of dollars to build up this proxy terror army in Syria, and it quite hasn't achieved the job, especially because Russia has now intervened and is annihilating these people. So, you know, in a very cynical way, the sponsors of these, you know, terrorist proxies are being relocated, preserved by being relocated out of Syria, and they're being put into Yemen in particular, as well as Ukraine. I mean, there was claims by the I think it was the Syrian military senior Syrian military people that the Turkish Airlines, this commercial company, Turkish Airlines, as well as the Emirati Airlines and the Qatar Airways, had, you know, flown hundreds, I think it was 500 mercenaries out of Syria into Yemen. They were landed in Aden, the southern port. Now, you know, again, this is really vital evidence of the whole racket that's being perpetrated here, the state sponsorship of these proxy terrorists. And because they're being bombed by Russia very effectively, now they're being shifted out of Syria and being posted in places like Yemen and also, it seems, Ukraine. So that just gives you a measure of how systematic this whole state-sponsored terrorist racket is.
And Libya too, right?
Yes, exactly, Patrick. Yes, thanks for reminding me. Well, the report today in the New York Times said that, and very plausibly, in my view, given what I've just said there about Yemen and Ukraine, Libya is also being used as they call it, a fallback position. The New York Times headline said something like, jihadis going back to Syria, Libya as a fallback option. So, you know, there seems to be a deliberate policy to try to, you know, preserve their assets, these terror assets, these proxy assets that the West and their allies have invested in to build up, to destroy Syria. Now, you know, they're being bombed to hell by the Russians and the Syrian army on the ground and the Iranians. And now the West is having to, you know, get these guys offside, if you like, as an American phrase goes, they're getting them out of Dodge, you know, to try to get them out of the firing line. And Libya is another so-called fallback position for these jihadis, because they're, according to that report in the New York Times, it's, this Libyan town of Sirte, which used to be Gaddafi's hometown, is being turned overnight into a, you know, really deformed Sharia law kind of culture, you know, run by these foreign Islamicists, you know, these foreign IS guys that have just kind of suddenly appeared in Libya. I mean, there was always an element of jihadism in Libya, as you know, Patrick, the Libyan fighting group that the NATO colluded with to overthrow Gaddafi. But there's been a new influx of jihadis, foreign, you know, jihadis from different parts of the world that have come from Syria and Iraq, and they've now been kind of like posted into Libya to, I don't know, to regroup or something. But, you know, this is a systematic, this is a huge international systematic operation of using these jihadis, weaponizing them, getting them from 80 different countries into Syria, now relocating them into Yemen, into Libya, into Ukraine. I mean, this isn't kind of just freelance kind of fighters. There has to be a state-sponsored, auspices for such a massive weaponization and mobilization of you know, tens of thousands of mercenaries. And, and I think there's a lot of evidence, there's huge evidence to show that, of course, you know, that the Western powers, the NATO powers are totally involved in that instrumentation of these jihadis.
Yeah, this is a multi-front proxy war. This is war. But it's not being waged in the way that we're being told by our Western media outlets and our political leaders. It's a very different war than the one that we're being told it is. And I think that's an important thing that people should take away. If you want to find out what's really happening, you're going to have to apply your brain to this one, because it's very it's getting more complex by the day. And if you don't have the foundation of knowledge to know where, how it started and where it came from and how it's built up, it's going to be very difficult to understand what you're looking at, you know, in the present day. And, this is where the media is at a huge disadvantage, because most of them have ignored the buildup of this, especially over the last 5 years. So they're a huge disadvantage. We have a lot of great commentators out here, like yourself, Finian, and many others that have followed this. But the problem is you know, this isn't getting communicated in the way it should through mainstream channels to the bigger numbers of people. This is the problem. So we're hoping that some of these ideas will trickle up, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the Western media, you tell a part of the story. It's not a complete crude misinformation campaign. I mean, like, you know, and we have to kind of acknowledge that, like, say, the New York Times does provide a source for us, Patrick, like you and myself and other alternative commentators. But you have to read between the lines and you have to fill in the blanks. They'll tell you a certain amount, like, you know, they've this story today about, you know, these jihadis coming from Syria and Iraq, and they're now being holed up in this Mediterranean coastal town of Libya. But they don't give you the full context.
Yes.
If you read that and you didn't really understand or have information on the bigger picture, you wouldn't see, I don't think you would see the significance of it. You wouldn't understand that there's state sponsors behind all this mobilization and movement of migration of terrorists and, you know, around the continent. The Western media, it's not a crude misinformation and telling absolute lies, but they just give you fragments of the picture, and you have to then build the fragments yourself from your own, you know, your own research and critical thinking. But you're not being given the story full on by the Western media. I mean, a lot of the times they completely omit and they don't report, like in Yemen. They're just not reporting anything. Now, that's a glaring omission. But then on the other hand, sometimes they will tell you a little bit, but they will omit a lot of the background. Like, they won't tell you, like, this story today in the New York Times, they didn't mention anything about Libya being a rat line after the overthrow of Gaddafi, NATO-led regime of Gaddafi. Libya was then a rat line of weapons and fighters from Benghazi into Turkey and Syria, well, through Lebanon. Now, Seymour Hersh, the respected American journalist, covered that quite a lot, and other people. But Libya was used as a rat line for weapons and fighters. Now, and that was instrumented by the NATO powers who overthrew Gaddafi. Now, American ambassador Chris Simpson, he was implicated. Christopher Stevens, the guy who was killed in 2012 on 11th of September, you know, when they raided the...
Yeah, he was the acting ambassador for Libya,
He's implicated in weaponizing, setting up the weapons trail from Libya into Turkey and eventually into Syria. Now, the New York Times, in this article today, which was a very interesting article to a point, but it did not mention any of the bigger picture issues, like how Syria was turned into a basket case in the first place, how the Western powers have used Syria as a staging post for jihadis and weapons, and how very likely Syria is now being used as a relocation safe house, if you like, to get these guys out of Syria who have failed to do their job of regime change. So the Western media, they sometimes they completely omit, sometimes they will admit some details, but it's very often you have to, build fragments. You know, they're not helping you to assimilate what's going on. You have to work, build their information with other sources of information, but they can be useful, as we've just, kind of indicated with the story today. The New York Times has run the story about, ISIS fighters, jihadis coming out of Syria into Libya, and that's a really interesting, I think, report, and to a point they deserve credit for it, but they will not really give you the full context of how significant that is. That's where, hopefully we come in Patrick.
Yeah, no, context is everything, and that's the thing that's almost completely, you'll never find it, and that's the, that is one of the trademarks of mainstream corporate media now, is that they rob you of the context. And, you know, in Libya, I mean, you can't talk about Libya without talking about the, you know, NATO resolution of, I think it was 1975 or something, where it was a no-fly zone that turned into a bombing resolution, and now you have a failed, collapsed nation state and a total a state of anarchy, and that's facilitated, among many things, the migrant crisis, the ISIS crisis, etc. And this is all started by, a desire for, NATO member countries to see regime change, in Libya, but not just regime change, but to completely collapse the country, to collapse a nation state. That's not in the article. That's not mentioned by, well, that's never, that's never hardly ever been mentioned in the New York Times or the Washington Post. And this, it, you know, so you, they just won't pull it together. And I, that goes back to what we were saying earlier. They can, they have the resources to make an impact, to make the world a better place, to create conditions of peace, to create, because public opinion is everything. Public opinion determines the behavior, the policies, and the directives of our political leaders. And so much public opinion is influenced by mainstream media. And I put them, I always said this before, Finney, and I've said it on the air many times. I've said on TV, I said the blood is on the hands of the media. You know, when people die, they're culpable. If they're promoting a war on false pretenses, the blood is on the hands of the media, not the politicians. Because without the media, the politicians couldn't sell it.
Well said, well said, Patrick. Beautifully said. And, you know, I'll just add that an international lawyer, very respected international lawyer, Christopher Black from Canada, any of your listeners should look him up. Christopher Black, he's represented a lot of figures who have been falsely prosecuted in international criminal court by the Western political agenda, and he's defended them very successfully and you know, nobly. Christopher Black has quite clearly said that the Western media are culpable of war crimes. Because, as you just said there, Patrick, they have facilitated huge, huge slaughter and bloodletting, you know, by lying, by enabling their governments, their, you know, the deep states to carry out their illicit agendas. And the Western media, it's not just a kind of a, you know, an innocuous kind of feeling, oh, they're not doing their job properly. It's much more sinister than that. They are actually culpable of war crimes because, you know, the Nuremberg trials established that, you know, if you, you know, it's not just kind of a matter of like, did you pull a gun on some guy's head or did you, you know, actually, you know, perpetrate a gross murderous crime on the spot. I mean, if you facilitate, if you systematize you know, crimes, then you're just as guilty as the guy who pulls the trigger. And the Western media have done that. I mean, they have done it with Libya, they've done it with Syria, you know, some, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan. They've done it with Iran to the sanctioned terrorism that Iran is subjected to for regime change. I mean, the Western media have facilitated that. So their culpability is just, you know, legion. And they're, you know, hopefully someday when there is a day of reckoning or some kind of day of account, the Western media are going to be in the dock for facilitating huge crimes against humanity.
Yeah, and they might as well be pulling their bomb doors open and pulling the trigger to drop the bombs, because it's exactly the same thing. All the news anchors, all the experts, all the correspondents who are basically facilitating under false pretexts most of the time. These sort of actions that we're seeing on a daily basis. So they're culpable, in my opinion. And I think they should be. But, hey, we're going to wrap up this segment, Finian. We're going to take a short commercial break, but before we go, I wanted to thank you for your time and for staying. I know it's late where you are. It's a bit later where you are, in your time zone, but thank you for joining us. And also, just tell our readers and our listeners where they can find your work, and I'll aim to try to, I mean, hopefully you can keep me abreast of your work and send me your links, and we can repost as and when you publish stuff. But tell us where you can find your work again.
Well, I'm working regularly for Russia Today, RT, as it's commonly known now, RT. Sputnik is another Russian news channel, and I really recommend it. Very busy news. It's a great site. They run good opinion pieces as well as just good news coverage. I also work for Strategic Culture Foundation there in Moscow. And previously I was working for Press TV, but the Western sanctions damaged Press TV's kind of coverage, I think, with a lot of the Western contributors were cut out of contributing to Press TV because of the Western sanctions. Again, another blow for freedom of speech by the West there. A Chinese paper called the Global Times. Patrick, I do a couple of pieces for them. Just keeping busy. I mean, I'm working away every week with three or four columns on those various sites. And it's a pleasure to talk with you, Patrick, this evening, and thanks very much for having me on your show. I hope we give something of interest to your listeners, and I just want to say thanks very much to your listeners for tuning in and trying to inform themselves, and it's very much appreciated. I mean, without you, Patrick and I wouldn't be doing what we're doing, so, you know, you give us a constituency to work for, and it's very much appreciated.
Absolutely. Yeah, that you're 100% correct there. without our listeners, without people tuning in right now, those of you listening, you know, we wouldn't be doing the show. We wouldn't be able to bring you this information. And it's because you're there that we're here. So don't forget that. A great, great point to end on. But thank you so much, Finian, and stay safe in your travels. And hopefully we'll be in touch and we'll speak again.
Yeah. Okay, Patrick. Good evening anyway, and take care of yourself.
Finian Cunningham, there's a link to his work on our show page right now. He's leaving right now, but we're going to be back after the break. We have a few more whack-a-moles to hit, and one of them is CNN. We'll be back after the break. This is the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Fool me once. Shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
And one of the things I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
I have filters on internets.
I'm Patrick Henningsen, host of the Sunday Wire, and you are tuned into AlternateCurrentRadio.com.
Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger, faster.
arthritis or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharmtec, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharmtec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharmtec.org.
A mouse who finds himself drowning in a bucket of cream has two choices. Drown. Or fight so hard he churns that cream into butter.
Jimmy Graham throws down hard.
And simply climbs out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the Sunday Wire. Thanks very much to our previous guest, Finian Cunningham, for staying overtime with us. But it was a great conversation, and he's very, very interesting personal experience he has working in the mainstream media and now working in sort of independent or alternative international media. It's a very interesting story, so he's got a lot to offer on that side. I mean, has reaffirmed some of my beliefs, absolutely. But great segment. If you missed any of that, definitely go and check that out afterwards. The show will be up on 21st Century Wire's show page after, and also at alternatecurrentradio.com. So here we are. I've been banging on about CNN and how it's full of government operatives and Pentagon operatives and CIA operatives, and I think we've proven that time and time again. And something happened this week which pretty much reaffirmed this one couldn't even, in a way, you have to thank Hillary Clinton. And the Republicans' hate for Hillary Clinton had helped to spur the story becoming mainstream, because this one of the CNN's senior political correspondent, her name is Elise Labo, and now I've seen her so many times, and she's got the most smug person practically on that network. She's always got a look on her face that's like she's trying to pull a fast one on you. I mean, talk about smug. She is the definition of smug. And she got caught out. Okay, so I knew something was up last week because I knew something was up because I knew CNN doesn't throw its own under the bus. So they said that she's been suspended last week because CNN reportedly suspended global affairs, senior global affairs correspondent Elise Labo, after she reacted last Thursday on Twitter to the House vote on the legislation that would make it harder for Syrian refugees to enter the United States. So she made a comment on Twitter about the GOP sort of House vote, dominated vote, which basically made it harder for Syrian refugees, saying what a bad day it was, blah, blah, blah. And so allegedly she was suspended for that. Go ahead and roll this Young Turks clip. We got this YouTube clip from the Young Turks. Go ahead and roll that. Let's listen to them talk about this.
A reporter has been suspended because their tweets about the Syrian refugee bill that was recently passed aren't sufficiently objective. Now, understand, you're not going to hear nearly enough about the laws that are being proposed to stop the Syrian refugees from coming in, some of the statements from politicians, from members of the media against Syrian refugees. And so we're seeing one of perhaps the few little one-toe-in-the-water attempts to make clear what's actually going on. And the reporter that we're talking about here was actually suspended. So CNN reportedly suspended global affairs correspondent Elise Labo after she reacted Thursday on Twitter to a House vote on legislation that would make it harder for Syrian refugees to enter the U.S. So, okay, very quickly, imagine what a tweet would have to look like for a reporter to be immediately suspended as a result of it. Now compare that mental image to this. House passes bill that could limit Syrian refugees. Statue of Liberty bows head in anguish.
How dare she?
How dare she?
So the reason why she got suspended is because CNN says that the reporters are not allowed to editorialize. Uh-huh. If you watch CNN, you'll see something that I rail against quite a bit, right? In their effort to be objective, they oftentimes end up being neutral, meaning that they'll report both sides, but then they don't report which side is telling you the truth.
Yes.
Okay? So they're very, very strict about editorializing, and that's exactly why this reporter is being suspended for 2 weeks. Think about that. Okay? What she did...
Okay, did I just hear that? That was one of the Young Turks there saying CNN is very serious about editorializing and they take that issue seriously. Listen, let me tell you about the Young Turks, okay? Young Turks are they're great, okay? But they only take you sort of surface level and maybe a little bit below the surface, but they don't take you very deep, okay? And their job is to, they're sort of a nice, acceptable hangout for, liberal-minded, democratic voters. So Janky will go and hit hard on a couple of issues, and he does a good job now and again there, but they don't really go too deeply. So they're basically almost in a way apologizing for CNN's, editorializing. They editorialize constantly. That's all they do. But if you look at CNN and you see them as a news network, or you believe in your perception of the world that CNN is an independent, privately run news network that has an altruistic mandate to help and serve the people of the world. If that's your view of CNN, then you'll probably miss all the editorializing. But if you look at CNN for what it truly is, which is a Pentagon run and operated, a CIA run and operated media outlet that's masquerading as an independent news outlet. If you understand the reality of CNN, then all of a sudden you change the way you look at all their sort of aggressive, overexcited coverage on war and terror and security. And I'll give you a couple of examples here. So that Young Turks, they try. And I give them credit for trying, but they won't let you know what's really going on because they can't. I don't think they have the people that have the analytical ability to really challenge, that means challenging Hillary and the Democrats as well. Okay. I knew this Elisa Lebo story was bogus. This thing when she was suspended. I didn't say anything. Per se, but I did sit back and I was like, oh, let's see what happens here. This is odd because I know what CNN is. It's full of operatives. It's full of to the last one. Probably the only person that's probably, there's only one or two that aren't operatives on that network. One of them is, probably Frederica Whitfield because she does the Saturday morning show. So it's not really a politicized show. She actually just reports things. The rest of them are gatekeepers and narrative controllers that just herd you into talking points, okay? Very Machiavellian. And then what happens this week? Ah, now we find out what this suspension last week, that's because CNN knew what was really coming down the pipeline and what Young Turk should have been suspecting, which is what we have known all along. If you saw her coverage of Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Washington last year, you'll know she is right in embed in that network. Audio clip number 8. Now let's hear this. Listen to this.
A reporter from American broadcaster CNN has found herself in the middle of a scandal. The classified State Department email shows she was receiving orders from a government official. In January 2013, Elise Lobetz was covering a Senate hearing on the U.S. Embassy attack in Benghazi. The email shows she coordinated her post on Twitter with Philip Raines, who was Assistant Deputy Secretary of State at the time. Now, in the email, Raines writes to Lobetz about an idea for a tweet. Lobetz says she will get back to him and writes several minutes later that the job is done. And here is that tweet that Raines came up with and that Lobetz later posted. It quotes Hillary Clinton saying she could have kept it all classified, but that's not her way. Several hours after that, Lobetz and Raines were in touch again. The reporter was apparently double-checking details of Senator Rand Paul's attendance at the inquiry, so that she could claim later in this tweet that he was absent and reject his criticism as irrelevant. She writes, Paul is a little late to the Benghazi game. Author and war correspondent Chris Hedges says journalists depend on access to political elites and are willing to give up many things for that.
That is a relationship that very swiftly and almost usually becomes incestuous, whether it's at the New York Times or CNN or anywhere else, because in essence these journalists depend on access to these elites in order to do their job, and they're not going to get access unless they not only placate but oftentimes carry water for these elites, and that's just basically what's been exposed. There are always those within the media who are willing to serve as, in essence, courtiers to the powerful, and that's basically what almost all journalists do in Washington.
But CNN, of course, doesn't like to be accused of close ties to the government. A year ago, the channel edited such criticism out of an interview they held with RT's Anissa Nabe.
Yes, of course, we also cite the Russian perspective, and of course, maybe even more so, because that's the perspective that we feel is being sidelined.
Well, that's what went on air. And here's the part that didn't make it to the show.
Kremlin-funded. Do we show more of a Russian perspective? Of course we do, because that's the perspective that's being sidelined. But it's an absurd question coming from someone that's propagated the line of the State Department for over 15 years. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. You've propagated the line of the State Department for over 15 years, starting with Yugoslavia and all the way into Syria.
Well, Chris Hedges again says officials often trade information for favorable coverage.
Those who are in power are not going to leak to them information unless they feel that those journalists will, if not always, certainly often promote their interests. And that's precisely what we have seen. These reporters, whose careers depended on open access to those who were powerful and essentially made their careers by passing on those narratives.
To another story we're across this hour, the chief rabbi of Brussels has described the fear on the streets of Belgium following the recent terrorist attacks in Paris.
Okay, so that was the real Lebo scandal, which came out a couple of days ago. So that's the suspension the other week, a week ago, was fake, because they knew it was coming down the pipeline, so they moved her out of the way, basically. You won't see any exposés on CNN about this story, by the way. So she's basically working with Hillary Clinton campaign operative in government. So the government's feeding her what to tweet. And she works for CNN, senior global affairs correspondent, getting fed lines by the government. So Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, at the end was commenting there. But even Hedges is even kind of not fully got, he's just dipping his toe in the water there. Okay. He's saying that journalists will trade favors for access to government. That's true. Hedges is correct. Okay. However, what Chris is not willing to do there, Chris Hedges is not willing to say, Elise Lebo is not a journalist. Once you start getting fed talking points from government, you are no longer, you cease to be a journalist at that point. You are then an operative. Okay. And to call it a journalist is disingenuous and, is false. She's not a journalist. She is a 100% government operative, okay? She is basically a marionette puppet who's working under the logo of CNN, along with Christiane Amanpour and all the rest of them, who are all functionaries of either the U.S. State Department or Council on Foreign Relations or NATO or the U.S. government or the White House, the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA, the list goes on. So all CNN is a hangout for basically operatives from all these different organizations to go and push all their crap. Okay. And package it so it looks like it's news. Okay. So the agenda was over Thanksgiving. So Black Friday came. Black Friday came. Play that Black Friday clip if you got that, Hesher. Cause this was the scene at Walmart. Listen to this. Just absolute mayhem. Just on Friday, so that was the consumer ritual in America known as Black Friday, where basically poor Americans go out and fight each other for cheap Chinese slave goods. So that's a ritual that happens every year, and there's a queue of people willing to be part of that cliche. Just go onto YouTube. You wouldn't want to fight at Black Friday if you'd seen all the previous fights from previous years, but there's no shortage of people willing to take part in that. Anyway, so this is what CNN was doing over Black Friday, okay? What was CNN doing? CNN was basically saying, America is on the edge. America's on the edge that ISIS is plotting to attack us over Thanksgiving. Our transportation might be infiltrated, etc. So basically, it's a holiday fear. The insider threat is what they called it. And so this is all based on the Paris attacks. They're claiming that there's people, a bus driver who was sympathetic towards ISIS in France. So he infiltrated the public transport system, and this caused a wave of panic over the U.S. as well. Are U.S. transportation systems infiltrated by ISIS too? Oof, I'm not sure. Let's go. Audio clip 16, CNN. Listen to this. So this is the holiday fear campaign was revved up on Wednesday and Thursday for Thanksgiving. So go ahead and roll that 16.
After terror attacks that left Europe staggering, President Obama says every possible step is being taken to keep Americans safe. Let's go to our justice correspondent, Pamela Brown. What's the latest, Pamela, that you're hearing?
Well, Wolf, the concern tonight among U.S. law enforcement is that a homegrown violent extremist will be emboldened to act out in the wake of the Paris attacks. With so many Americans traveling for the holiday today, President Obama urged calm, saying while there is not a specific or credible threat in the homeland, people need to stay vigilant. Tonight, as Thanksgiving travelers stress the U.S. transportation system and ISIS operatives remain on the loose in Europe, the president, flanked by his national security team, made a rare appeal to Americans, telling them to carry on with their holiday plans.
Now, we know of no specific and credible intelligence indicating a plot on the homeland. And that is based on the latest information I just received in the Situation Room.
Despite those assurances, sources say law enforcement remains on heightened alert, ramping up security at airports and train stations.
There is a reinforcing of existing security measures, and it should be obvious to the public that there is a heightened presence in places like here, like Union Station here, at airports, other places, other public events.
As the U.S. offers a show of force, in Europe, police are out in force. Belgian authorities say they are searching for 10 people suspected of being a, quote, terror threat. Key among them, this man, Mohamed Abrini. He was...
Okay, so that's it. Holiday fear, American show of force. We're out in force. We're going to travel. We're not going to let the terrorists defeat us, et cetera, et cetera. And then so Obama's going on. So all this fear got ramped up, and then the president comes and says, there is no specific credible threat. Keep calm and carry on. You know, it's just like out of a freaking movie or something. It's gotten so Walt Disney-like. So here's Fox's version of the Holiday Fear, the Holiday Fear Roadshow, Fox News audio clip 17. So this is the Fox version of basically this. So this is the sort of sister program of that segment from CNN. Does fear one way, Fox does fear another way. Go ahead and roll this.
To you. Welcome to Fox and Friends First. Thank you so much for joining us as always and starting your day. I'm Heather Childers.
And I'm Anna Koyman. It's 29 minutes after the hour. We do begin with that Fox News alert. Americans are on edge. Tight security and long lines at the nation's airports and train stations for the busy Thanksgiving holiday.
This as ISIS releases a brand new video daring the U.S. to, quote, bring it on. Kristen Fisher is live in the nation's capital with how the president is responding. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. Well, the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have actually issued a bulletin to law enforcement across the country warning what many Americans had already suspected and feared, that ISIS followers in the U.S. could attempt copycat attacks using IEDs and guns just like they did in Paris. The bulletin specifically warns of the vulnerability of soft targets like restaurants, stadiums, and public transportation.
They want to attack people who aren't ready in high concentrations and to send a message of fear across the Western world and across the U.S. Population. And as a result, you need to be on your guard. Americans need to be tactically aware and they need to be observant of what's going on around them, especially now during Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, just yesterday, ISIS released a new slickly produced video in English, and it tells America to, quote, bring it on. It is clearly intended to instill fear ahead of the busiest travel weekend of the entire year. But Obama administration officials are saying, don't let the terrorists win. Don't change your travel plans. Just be extra vigilant over the next few days. This morning, President Obama will be meeting with his national security team in the Oval Office. Their focus is on homeland security heading into this Thanksgiving holiday. And at the moment, the White House is stressing there is no credible or specific intelligence indicating that a Paris-like plot on the homeland is imminent. But of course, it's something that is on everybody's minds. Heather.
Kristen Fisher, thank you so much. 32 minutes after.
Okay, that was, I don't know who, which Fox airhead that was, but the expert they had was, there was Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He looks like the guy from the Dos Equis commercial. It's like the world's most interesting man. So he's a Marine Corps University. I didn't know they had a university. So he's on there basically saying, be afraid, be very afraid. And, if that doesn't work, just be afraid. So that was what an amazing career these people can manage to etch out. So that's the holiday fear junket. So now it's the insider threat, you see. So it's not just ISIS, but now there's people working, according to CNN, working in public transport that are a threat. Basically, audio clip 14, roll that one. It's the insider threat intro.
Between terrorists and ISIS in Syria. CNN's Martin Savage is in Paris for us. Martin, disturbing new information coming in tonight. What are you learning?
Wolf, this information is troubling on a number of levels. Number one, the more the French investigators dig, the more problems they seem to uncover. Another one of these terrorists appears to have been able to travel easily to Syria, come back to Europe undetected. And now new fears in France.
So that was Martin Savage. I'm Martin Savage. Do you like my good deep voice? I'm Martin Savage. I haven't got any brain activity going on. I just read the teleprompter. So he says, Martin Savage says, did you catch that? He said, now evidence that one of the terrorists was able to travel to Syria and then come back completely undetected. So any person with like a blip of an IQ will ask the question at this point. So if you traveled to Syria and back to France undetected, how do they know he went there in the first place if it was undetected? I mean, it's just me, but this is sort of a complete failure of basic logic listening to some of these news reports. But so that was, oh my God, that was him. So let's see, what else have they got? Audio clip 13, go ahead and, yeah, radicals at airports.
Covering all that much more this hour, our correspondents and expert analysts, they are all standing by. Let's get straight to Paris first, where a source is now telling CNN about some ties between terrorists and ISIS in Syria. CNN's Martin Savage is in Paris for us. Martin, disturbing new information coming in tonight. What are you learning?
Wolf, this information is troubling on a number of levels. Number one, the more the French investigators dig, the more problems they seem to uncover. Another one of these terrorists appears to have been able to travel easily to Syria, come back to Europe undetected. And now new fears in France that possibly their transportation system has been infiltrated.
Tonight, with an international manhunt still underway, there are new details emerging about a second suspect on the run. Mohamed Abrini, last seen here at a gas station in France with Salah Abdeslam, shortly before the November 13th attacks, traveled to Syria in 2014. And like Abdeslam, was able to make his way back into Europe undetected, a major concern for investigators. Also tonight, new fears radicalized Islamic workers are infiltrating the French transportation system. A report revealing concerns about airport employees with access to commercial airlines at France's two main airports. Officials say since January, 50 employees at Charles de Gaulle International Airport have been denied access to secure locations due to suspicions they may have been radicalized. French transportation unions have complained that some bus drivers refuse to acknowledge women and have been found praying inside their bus when they were supposed to be driving their routes. One of the Bataclan theater attackers was a bus driver as recently as 2012. Meanwhile, French military jets are stepping up the battle against ISIS, pounding targets inside of Syria and Iraq.
Contre la barbarie.
There is no alternative. We have to destroy ISIS.
Hear about that infiltration, Wolf. Think of Charles de Gaulle International Airport.
Okay, so suspicions that they may have been radicalized and used to drive a bus. Right, so that constitutes infiltrating the transportation system. So if the guy drove a bus in 2012, so that means ISIS has infiltrated the transportation system, according to Martin Savage. Between Martin Savage and Wolf Blitzer, that's a combined IQ of like 100, okay? These guys are, they're the equivalent of the women on Fox, okay, in the short skirts. That got Martin Savage is like the sort of, he's the beefcake, middle-aged equivalent of the girls in the tight skirts on Fox. There's no difference. Okay. In the sort of the level of depth, it's the same. And Wolf Blitzer, pretty much the same. Okay. Wolf will occasionally come out with a gold nugget of wisdom, you know, about twice a year. If you listen to him 24 hours a day, you might come out with one or two nuggets per year. That they only last about 3 to 4 seconds. So anyone who uses the word homeland on U.S. media, homeland, I have never used the word homeland. I refuse to use the word homeland because it sounds too much like Vaterland, the Nazi term. Okay? Vaterland. Homeland, it seems to me synonymous with Vaterland. Therefore, I don't use it. Okay, because I can't think of a more un-American term or a more un-American word than homeland. That was a term that was invented post 9/11 by which department in the government who came up with that one? I think we can narrow that down to two departments that would have synthesized a piece of language like homeland. Okay, and they've injected that into our TV shows, our movies, our culture, our politicians are all using. Obama used the word homeland. Okay, so if someone and Pamela Brown uses the word homeland, Wolf Blitzer uses the word homeland, they're basically brainwashing the population of the United States to speak their language, which is the language of the Reich. Okay, homeland, a bogus, completely, it's a total political construct that word is of a fascist construct nature. It has been thrust upon it and shoved down our throats by all these people that we're just listening to now. Okay? Homeland. If you use the word homeland, then you've pretty much given up on your republic. You've given up on your constitutional republic, and you've embraced the Reich. Okay? Don't use the word homeland if you care about your country. Okay? We have words already that they're already on the books, like the United States of America, like America, like our country, like the Constitutional Republic of the United States. Okay, we have terms, okay, people. We don't need to import Nazi language to describe our country, okay? Not necessary. That's a bit superfluous, in my opinion. I know. Has that dawned on anybody in media that you're regurgitating a political construct, which is quite rigid, actually. Quite rigid. What it represents, the homeland, the Vaterland. Look that up, Vaterland. That was one of Hitler's favorites. So just, we're going to, one last CNN roll here. They've just now calling this the insider threat. This is a new phrase which CNN has invented. That's what they do. They invent these things and then they roll them out. So audio clip 12, the insider threat. This is Pamela Browner. Pamela Brown, death to correspondent. Pamela Brown.
So despite these stepped up measures, Aaron, as it stands now, most airport workers do not get screened when they show up to work every day. Homeland Security officials say it's near impossible to screen every airport worker as they come on a daily basis, especially at those big airports. But with the insider threat being such a big concern, Aaron, officials acknowledge having only random checks could be a loophole.
It is pretty scary. Pamela Brown, thank you very much. I want to go now to former CIA counterterror official Phil Mudd, former director of intelligence at the NYPD, Mitch Silber, and our terrorism analyst, Paul Cruikshank. A lot to talk about here. Paul, though, in just 24 hours, France and Belgium banning some employees with tarmac and plane access because they say they could be radicalized. They could be Muslim extremists. There's a lot of things that are very scary about this, but one of them is this. Now they're looking, all of a sudden, they find 50, 60 people. Maybe there could be more. How could they have missed this before?
Well, there are a lot of questions clearly about that, Aaron. I think this is really of significant concern because the holy grail for these terrorist groups is to bring down planes. The easiest way to bring down planes is to get a bomb on board and not even having to go through all those security screening systems. And clearly insiders at the airport, people with access to the baggage, the tarmac, cleaning crews, those are the kind of people that can potentially get bombs on planes. And especially in the United States, there's just no systematic daily screening of airport workers in nearly every American airport. The only airports that do it are Miami and Orlando. And I think that may well have to change. There's certainly going to be a lot of calls for that to change, that every airport worker who has access to these sensitive areas should be screened.
So Phil, there's that issue. Then you have this issue. So let's just take France, Charles de Gaulle, 50 employees. They now are taking away their access to the tarmac and planes. They say they could have become radicalized. Their access, as I said, has been denied. But as far as we know, they...
Okay, so basically France has gone completely ballistic. And so now they're trying to profile anybody with the wrong surname, basically, out of working in airport jobs, per se. Okay. So there's Paul Cruikshank, their CNN's terrorism analyst. If you think that he doesn't work for or isn't being managed by some sort of security agency, then that would probably be kind of a naive assumption. So he's in there stoking up the fear. That's what he does. They've got a whole line of these guys. And so basically anyone who suspicions that they may have been radicalized, what does that mean exactly? Suspicions that they may have been radicalized. So suspicion may be radicalized. First of all, how do you define radicalized exactly? Can you define that for us? Nobody can seem to do that, okay? What does that mean, radicalized? Now, suspicions of, so there's a vague term, radicalized, And so you suspect it of being vaguely radicalized, right? And now it's you're suspecting that you may have been vaguely radicalized. And this is grounds for getting blacklisted. And this is what these experts at CNN are promoting. He said we need to roll this out in every single airport in the United States. Okay? So that's an operative. That is 100% an operative. He's talking like he's coming out of some security agency or he's working for Michael Chertoff. Okay? Who did very well out of this sort of fear tsunami, Michael Chertoff, with his body imaging business. Remember that? You see them in the airports. Chertoff Group. So go look that up. Michael Chertoff, body scanners. Okay? He did very well. He jumped from head of Homeland Security and became a billionaire after the Detroit underwear bomber, which was a complete fake terrorist event. Totally fake. Had a handler, brought him on managed to get put on a plane without any documents. Had a handler in Amsterdam. We talked about it on this show with Kurt Haskell. You can go back and listen to that episode. So a totally contrived fake event. There was no underwear bomb. Wasn't going to blow up. Okay. It was a really lousy prop. And they're basing all this policy on this and the body scanners, et cetera, on a lie, basically. That's how one would look at it if they actually looked at it for what it really is, instead of looking at it through the hyperbolic, kaleidoscope lens, that everyone seems to be addicted to. A kaleidoscope of hyperbole and, paranoia and assumptions and wild speculations and basically just total creative writing, in my opinion. So beyond a joke, folks. It's beyond a joke. So that's our weekly CNN. I had some clips from Ben Carson here. I won't play them. Suffice to say, Ben Carson took a trip. Dr. Carson goes to Jordan. It'd be a great children's book. Dr. Carson goes to Jordan and tells us all from his live link in Amman that he's gone and he's seen the refugees up close. I've seen them up go. Oh, actually, let's play Ben real quick. So this is Dr. Carson goes to Jordan. This is Ben's first trip outside the United States, I think. Audio clip 22. Listen to this.
It's good to be able to see these things for yourself so you can actually begin to formulate the right kinds of policies with the real information.
And what are the right kinds of policies for those Syrian refugees? Should America be taking some of those refugees?
I believe that the right policy is to support the refugee program that is in place that works extremely well but does not have adequate funding. If you do that, you solve that problem without exposing the American people to a population that could be infiltrated with terrorists who want to destroy us. If you can eliminate the possibility of terrorists infiltrating them and wanting to destroy us, you have a different argument. But I don't see that being eliminated.
Do you think there were terrorists among those refugees who you talked to?
I don't know whether
Oh my God. Yeah, so she asked that question at the end. Do you think there were terrorists amongst the refugees? And he couldn't answer it. He just dodged his way around. So the refugees could be infiltrated by people who want to destroy us, right? So you think that someone coming through is going to destroy America? You know what? America's going to do a plenty good job of destroying itself. It doesn't need any help from any terrorists. Judging by the behavior, the rhetoric, all the sellouts, all the charlatans, the opportunists running through politics, infested in the media, security, private security firms. Don't worry, you don't need terrorists to destroy this country. I think all these people who, on this feeding frenzy, since 2001, have done a plenty good job of that. Okay, they've done more than any terrorist could ever do in destroying this country. So that Ben Carson, amazing. It's amazing, you know. Yeah, I'm sure, like I said before, I'm sure he's a great surgeon, a brain surgeon, neurosurgeon. I'm sure he's awesome. I'm sure he's probably the best, one of the best, if not the best, okay? But outside of the doctor's office or the surgery, Ben Carson doesn't know what he's talking about, okay? So they asked him, what about the Syrian refugees? Oh, I've seen them. They look like they're very happy here. They're really well looked after, all 1.4 million Syrian refugees in the camps in Jordan, okay? He's quite happy. He says, well, they should just stay here. They look happy here. We don't need to take any, okay? But that's not the point, okay? The point is, why are they there in the first place? And an idiot like Ben Carson, this is how stupid he is, how stupid Trump is, how stupid John Kasich is, how thick Marco Rubio and all the and Jeb Bush and all the rest of them, thick as can be. Because what they won't tell you is the reason why those refugees are there in those camps in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Turkey. Okay? The reason there's a refugee crisis is directly because of U.S. policy to destabilize the country of Syria. It's on the books. It is a policy, and flooding it with arms and training terrorists just a few miles away from where Ben Carson is standing in Jordan is where they trained many of those terrorists and sent them on their merry way, well armed and ready to go, you know, on jihad. And they did the same from the north in Turkey, and they created what's called the Syrian sandwich. Okay. Ben Carson doesn't have the capacity to know that, or find out about that, or articulate that, because if you're a doctor and you're a big problem solver like Dr. Ben Carson claims he would be, with all his rhetoric, oh, we need to get to the cause of the problem. We need to understand what how this problem came to be. Yes, Dr. Carson, maybe you need to do that. Maybe you need to find out what the cause of all those refugees are and comment on that, please. I have no respect at all for these people running for president who claim they know this, who claim they know that. And I have no respect for any of the political participants who designed the destabilization of Syria, whatever department they were in, who played a hand in that. They created the problem. They facilitated the rise of ISIS. ISIS are using our weapons that U.S. taxpayers paid for. How is that right? What part of that is correct and right and just? Tell me what part of that you can justify. You can't justify any of it. It's a criminal enterprise from top to bottom, and we have played a central role. In fact, we are the maestro. The United States has been the maestro in coordinating this effort. Some cash coming from Saudis, some cash coming from Qatar. We provide some of the hardware. We give air cover for ISIS and al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda, in hopes that they'll overthrow and give us the regime change that the State Department is so desperate for, that they want, that Britain wants, that France wants, that Turkey wants, that Israel wants. Don't forget about Israel. They're not off the hook by any stretch of the imagination. They're just playing it very cool and quiet. But they're up to their necks in Syria, if you do any little bit of research there. Why can't someone like Ben Carson, who's supposed to be so smart, see any of this or understand any of it? Because he refuses. He's in denial. Well, he doesn't want to take on the corridors of power. Because he'll sit there and he'll say, well, you want to hear something stupid? Listen to the audio clip 21, and we'll go out. We'll finish up in a minute. This is Ben Carson from Jordan this morning on the live satellite link. Roll that 21.
And I want to ask you quickly about ISIS. I was in Iraq last week, and I was in the Air Combat Control Center. Would you like to see the rules of engagement loosened? One of the things they told me is they aim for zero civilian casualties and sole purpose ISIS structure. Should that change?
What I would really like to see is an administration that really seriously sits down with our experts in that region and would ask them what is needed in order to accomplish our goal of eliminating this group of terrorists. That's what I would really like to see.
So you don't know whether you'd want those rules of engagement.
Experts in that area. But those of us who are not experts in that area can sit around all day long talking about, oh, we should do this and we should do that.
Okay, so Ben Carson was asked a direct question there, and of course he didn't answer it. So that shows you what kind of politician he'll be. Okay, he's learning quick, which is don't answer questions and just bullshit your way through the interview, which is what Carson's doing. And he's trying to sell that as him being smart. He says, we need an administration that will talk to the experts, the military experts, and ask them, what do you need to meet your objectives? So he was asked a direct question on, do you support the rewriting of the rules of engagement to basically get rid of this issue of collateral damage? In other words, you can carpet bomb civilians, you know, so if ISIS is or whatever your so-called enemy is, you could drop a nuclear bomb, essentially, and wipe everything out. As long as it meets the objective of wiping out the enemy, then any collateral damage is neither here nor there. That's the question that was being asked to the charlatan, Ben Carson. And he didn't answer it, of course. And he said, oh, I defer to my military experts. This is where guys like, they're all dangerous. Don't get me wrong. They're all equally as dangerous. But this is where the Trumps and the Carsons are even more dangerous. Because the Trumps and the Carsons, if the general walked up with someone walked into their office with all the medals and the regalia and all the impressive ranks and stripes and whatnot, come marching in there like taps, and they say, Mr. President, we really need to move quickly on this. And this is what we're the experts, and this is what we think we need to do, which is we need to carpet bomb this whole section of the country. We use cluster bombs and other sort of things, depleted uranium munitions, and maybe a few small tactical nuclear weapons. And we think this will eliminate the threat and neutralize the target. And Ben Carson will say, "Well, you're the expert, so that sounds good to me. Why don't you go ahead and do that then?" You know, and Trump as well, he would be totally fixated and infatuated with the power that comes with military. Okay. Keep saying, the military will love me. I'll be so good for the military. I'll rebuild the military and our great military people. They need leaders like me. Listen. And I hear this too, that the military is going to have a coup and overthrow Obama, right? How many times have I heard that over the last 8 years? Don't think for a second that the military, if you put some of those gumbos in charge, that they're going to be any better for you, trust me, than any of these clowns that we've got. In fact, they could be much worse, okay? But there's this thing called fascism that Trump is flirting with. I see Carson flirting with it a little bit as well. So when you put an absolute fool in charge, right, then the power structure that basically forms around him will basically direct and run him. And some might argue this is what happened with Barack Obama, at least for the first 6 years of his presidency. He didn't have it. He came in with no he had no network of support. He was just basically an absolute puppet. It was like an action figure. They just sort of put the batteries in and then told him where to go, what to say, and what to do. And then after 6 years, he grew a brain of his own, a conscience of his own, tried to do a few things. And then, he still does not have the pedigree. Judging by Obama's reaction to the Turkish shoot down of the Russian plane, he bottled it, he blew it. he totally fumbled it. That shows you that he has not developed a pedigree after 6 years in office. The one thing he has excelled at is telling jokes, dancing and doing skits on late night television shows. He will be a great entertainer. But as far as a commander in chief goes, in my opinion, he's been a total failure on that respect. The Iran, negotiations, that was a good effort. We'll see what that nets in the end. Maybe nothing, because you're presiding over a divided, house, a divided country. He didn't bring the country together. He tore it apart. And, so we'll see how long unfortunately the Iran deal might get scoppered by the next Republican president or whoever. The point being, I just can't believe some of these people want to put themselves up to be, leader of the United States like Carson or Trump. Judging by what I've heard in the last week, it's horrifying. John Kasich, there's another one. He's gone completely goose-steppy in the last week, trying to look tough. He does not look like a nice person. No, he looks like a nasty, very nasty individual. And he wants to be president. Another one. Oh, we need to shoot down those Russian planes. We need to send a message to Putin. Carly Fiorini, same thing. Send a strong message to Putin. You're not going to fly over here. You know, they're all basically, it's like the John McCain hive mind has taken over. Unbelievable. They've all gone completely mad. All gone mad. What are we left with at the end? I don't know. I really don't know. What I know is that all these sort of power-hungry, dynastic, political, ambitious people, these are the last people. Anybody who wants to be president of the United States should be disqualified. By that, so I guess Carson's got some points in his corner there. But absolutely frightening. I was going to talk about the Planned Parenthood thing. That looks like a staged event. Part of the culture wars. Maybe we'll talk about that later in the week or next Sunday. But anyway, and also the Paris Climate Summit. My God, where does it end? Where does it end? Anyway, just want to thank our guest Finian Cunningham for joining us this week. That was a fantastic conversation. If you missed any of that, you want to go back and listen to it. And also to all our listeners and readers at the Sunday Wire and 21st Century Wire, thank you so much, and everyone on Facebook, and also I wanted to thank the team at ACR as well. So I think we're getting into some new digs now, so getting our feet set, and I think Hesher's getting a new studio set up in place. So we've got good things coming down the pipeline the holiday season. So do tune in and stick around. Gonna have some great shows for you, including next week, here, same time, same place. Gone a little bit overtime today, so we appreciate everyone who stuck around for that. Take care, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is the Sunday Wire, and we are signing out. All the best.
Or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharmtec, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharmtec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharmtec.org.
Tune in Sundays at noon Eastern Time or 9 a.m. Pacific Time for the Sunday Wire for 3 hours of action-packed talk radio on 21stCenturyWire.com and AlternateCurrentRadio.com.